Masipole Zibeko. I am the secretary of the committee. We received an instruction through the office of the House Chairperson, Honorable Frolic, to say that we elect a new chairperson formally. Now, based on the rules of the National Assembly and the 9th edition, Rule 158, then requires the committee to actually formally appoint the chairperson amongst the members. So quickly, we are now honorable members. I will quickly request hands to actually nominate a name that can come forward in terms of being the chairperson.
What is all, eh?
I can hear you, Honorable Kluwa.
Yeah, my apologies. It's not a hand to make a proposal. I just want to find out the instruction from Honorable Frolic. Was there any reason being given why we should elect a new chairperson?
Honorable, I can't be in the position to answer that. I probably leave it also to members to discuss among themselves. If I may put it that way, as was also initiated earlier on under the McGlue and other members, I am on Rule 158 in terms of just getting hands for the nomination of a chairperson.
Chair, my hand is up, Manduli.
Yes, Manduli, Honorable Manduli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the meeting and all protocol is observed. I nominate the name of Honorable Theliso Mgweba to be the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration.
Matizole.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Honorable Nduli. We have a second. I've noted you, Honorable Nduli. Can I just come back after you, after I've just get the second nomination? And second of the name of Honorable Mkweba.
Hey, my name is up, Matthew.
Yes, Honorable Kibi.
Yes, thanks. Good morning, Maskole, honorable members. I raise my hand to support the proposal by Honorable Nduli that we should have Honorable Theliso Mgweba as the chairperson of the portfolio committee. And coming to what was raised here about reasons, if we remember, each and every time, there are changes that occur have been proposed in some of our committees in terms of chairpersons and whatever. So we don't really need to dwell on issues of reasons. If the parliament is an organization or parliament feels that we should change this chairperson, and we should do that. So I support the name of Honorable Mgweba as chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Honorable Mgweba, do you accept the nomination?
Thank you very much, Masi, and good morning to honorable members and colleagues in the platform. Yes, I accept, Mr. Masi.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mgweba. Do we now have any other nomination on the platform?
Honorable Martins, that's it, darling.
I'm still coming to you, Honorable Mgweba. I have not forgotten you, but I just need to quickly finish this part. I will be raising the hand that is going to be pro what we are busy with currently, and then we can discuss other matters outside my responsibility in terms of chairing the meeting today. Now, so if you are raising something different, I'm not sure, Honorable Member.
Yeah, no, Matizola, it's on the same issue. I don't think I'm going to form part of a voting kettle and no reason been given why. The ANC must take us in confidence. Why are we having an election? Whether the former chairperson resigned, what has happened? We can't just been told, no, we must just have an election without any reason. It's unacceptable.
Chair Manduli, my hand is up. Can I come in?
Honourable members, can you just please?
Can I come in on this issue, Chair?
Can I, Honourable Manduli, can I please suppress? Don't mind. I just quickly, like I intended to say, is there any other hand that one is?
Yes, Chairperson. That's what I wanted to say. Right now, we need the hand that if there is another nomination for. Another name for the nomination of the chairperson. If there is not, Chair, can we close the matter?
Thank you so much, Honourable Manduli. You've really assisted me. I think let me then hand over to our congratulations to Honourable Mukweba. Now you can also take the chairperson position. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Masi, and once more, good morning, honorable members, and the DG and the team of the DPME and our support staff. I'm not sure if Honorable Nduli wants to speak.
Chairperson, I think it's the letter at the end. Is my hand still up?
Yes, Honorable Nduli.
My sincere apology, Chairperson. My hand was up when we were dealing with the nominations. I'm so sorry. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Honorable Nduli.
But nevertheless, Chairperson, I would love to congratulate you for your newly deployment as the Portfolio Committee Chairperson and to your future endeavor.
Recording in progress.
Masi, there's in the participants, there's iPhone. Can the owner of the iPhone change this to his or her name?
I'll follow up, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everyone. I don't see the minister, but I can see the DG and the team, and also honorable members and our support staff. And let me also declare this portfolio committee meeting officially opened, honorable members. And I think one must also indicate to the honorable members that the National Assembly Programming Committee have decided to establish the Portfolio Committee on Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and of which, as per the reconfiguration, and obvious immediately after the reshuffling by the president, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation was declared as a standalone portfolio committee. And as such, honorable members, as this portfolio committee will not longer oversee the function of the department, which is the DPME, but however will continue with our business of the day with the department as our last official portfolio committee meeting with them. And we'll meet them as we then, as portfolio committees, organize joint oversight meetings in the near future. So today, as this committee, we are then releasing the DPME as they will be a standalone portfolio committee. And they will remain with the Department of Public Service and Administration. So I felt that, honorable members, I must then inform all of you. This is the last meeting with the DPME today. And before the presentation, as we then bid farewell to them as a standalone portfolio committee, I will request that at least honorable members that want to say something to the department, because this one is our last meeting with them, honorable members. And I felt that it's important as we then proceed with this meeting. But honorable members must be informed that there's a decision by the programming committee, and of which I understand the fact that it has also been communicated to all political organizations in the National Assembly that this department is a standalone department going forward, and of which is their last meeting with us today. I can see then the hand of Honorable Magluwa, and followed by Honorable Nduli, and then Honorable Kibi. Honorable Magluwa?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I also want to join you in congratulations on your election, although we don't know what were the reasons. Then I also want to say thank you for the announcement. Yes, our political party also received the good news that this will be a standalone committee. And I think, Chair, this is a long overdue. It will just empower us as members of parliament to have a very sound tool in our hands in terms of oversight. This portfolio committee is long overdue. And I also would like to stress that believe that to say that we will have a very good, sound relationship with this committee, with this department, newly established department. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Maglu, Honorable Nduli.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, greetings to the department, led by the DG. On behalf of this committee, I would also love to thank the department for their dedication, coming working with this portfolio committee, tabling presentation, giving us information, and we are going to really miss interacting with the department. But we all know that if you are a member of a parliament, you belong to all committees. We will be not serving as a portfolio committee, interacting directly with them. But whatever they are doing, we'll be still with them. We were together when we came up with the DGM, and we were together when you kept on on the vision and the mission of the developmental state, capable and ethical state. And we hope that this country is going to realize that through our DPME. And we are very much keen to the baby that was conceived whilst we were here, the DGM. Please take care of that baby. Thank you so much, DG and the team.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nduli, Honorable Bukibi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning once more to yourselves, the honorable members and the department. Honorable Chair, let me start by congratulating yourselves for the new responsibility of being a chairperson of this committee. Once more, congratulations. We are really, I just want to assure you that we are going to be working together, and you can count on us as this team, as we've been working together, and nothing is going to change. Honorable Chair, let me also say to the department, it was good working with them. We worked with them for quite some time, and at times it was not easy. Umandule has said a lot, but at times it was not easy. Sometimes we'll get angry with them, and there are a number of issues. Sometimes when we are raising issues that we want them to take note of, we were not very kind with them. But at all times they were there to listen and go and rectify and get back to us again, give us the necessary information, and also try to rectify whatever that was wrong that made us not that made us unhappy as the team. So I hope that we are still going to be meeting from time to time, because as members of parliament, as Honorable Ntuli has already said, we belong to all committees. We hope that what they were doing with us, they are going to be still like that in their, which is another team committee that they are going to be with as the state. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gibby. We are then moving to the next item, apologies, Masi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Congratulations once again. We only have one apology for now, Chair. It's Honorable Gondwe, who was the presiding chair of the committee. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Can I then close my video, because there's low shedding until 12 o'clock? And then the next item, Honorable Members, we have invited the
Chairperson, my sincere apology, Manduli.
Yes, Honorable Manduli.
Chairperson, I would love to request to be recused at 11, Chair, if the meeting is still on. I'm seeing the doctor.
No, that's fine.
Thank you,
Chairperson. That's fine. We've invited the DPME to come and account on the implementation of the Operation PAKISA and the medium-term strategic framework monitoring tool. And the department's commended, Honorable Members, is to plan, monitor, and evaluate the performance of all government departments' deliverables. Having adopted the MTSF in 2019 and revised it in 2021 due to COVID-19 pandemic impact. So, Honorable Members and colleagues, the purpose of this meeting is just to track progress on the implementation of the Operation PAKISA and the MTSF deliverables. And I would wish that, because I can see the Minister is not here, but I will invite the DG, Mr. Nkuna, to do the opening remarks, and immediately then the presenters of the first presentation, then the second presentation on MTSF, they will take over, and after we'll then take questions from honorable members. Thank you very much, and I'm giving you DG Nguna to do your opening remarks. Now that the minister is not here, and we have also tabled the apology of the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good morning, Chairperson, members of the committee, colleagues from DPME. Chair, the DDGs are here, and we also have colleagues from mainly the sector monitoring branch who are going to be leading us with the presentation. Chair, let me also add a way to congratulate you on your appointment as Chair, I know that this is not our space, but I think just in passing to say that. Now, as DPME, we are happy to, we have always been happy to be working with you. It was the best of times. And when I say that it was the best of times, not because you always agreed with us. There were difficult moments when you came hard on us as a team in DPME, but we always understood that you did not hate us, but you had to do what you did in the course of ensuring that we pay attention to one thing and one thing only. Every time we engage with yourselves, we're always reminded that we're not working for ourselves, but working for the people of South Africa. Every time you scrutinize our report, you always ask the question, what about the people? How do these reports affect the people? We agreed with you on that every time you reminded us of the ultimate obligation of the state to address the issues of the people. So, Chair, we look forward to future engagements with you. One of the key focus areas of DPME is priority one on the capacity of the state, which I believe we have to also serve in this committee, that every time we have that report to come to this committee and report to the committee on the state of the capacity of the state and its ability to deliver services to the people. So the nature of DPME is such that once we report to one portfolio committee on our vote, we also engage with other committees so that specific reports can be shared with the committees, because we are an aggregator of what happens within the state. So we look forward to such opportunities wherein you will invite us to deal with priority one issues, much as we report to the other committee on everything else. So on that note, I would like to move forward to the actual agenda items for today. One is Operation Pakisa, which, as correctly indicated earlier on, was born in this space. You have been with the Operation Pakisa for such a very long time. Now, what happened with Operation Pakisa is that we started implementing as we were on the verge of the transition to from the fifth to the second to the sixth administration, my apologies. So we started to implement Operation Pakisa at that time. Now, as we're managing the transition, it so happened that we were hit by COVID-19. We changed the way government worked. We had to collapse the government and work through what is called net joints and focus on dealing with the pandemic. I need to indicate that in that process of dealing with the pandemic, elements of Operation Pakisa were there, were retained in that the format that government took was more or less similar to what Operation Pakisa sought to do. Now, post the pandemic, we had to undertake a review of Operation Pakisa to check the extent to which the devastation has affected the way we can proceed with Operation Pakisa. So colleagues who are going to present are also going to touch on that and take you through the evaluation that we have done of Operation Pakisa and the results that have since emerged, by and large indicating that we still need Operation Pakisa to move forward. I need to emphasize that as much as we are the lead implementer or coordinator of Operation Pakisa, we felt it necessary that we must also evaluate our own programs as DPME, so that we don't only focus on evaluating others, but we must also look into our own programs, whether they are adequate to deal with the kind of issues that you yourselves have asked us to do. That is what we are going to deal with in the first presentation. In the second presentation, we are going to take you through the state of performance in the main of government, but also touching on some of the sectors, some of the critical sectors in line with the 7 priorities of government. We will indicate everything. We will, as we've done before, be frank with ourselves where there are challenges in government, but also come up with solutions, recommendations that are required to get government to perform better. The report that we're sharing with you has already been shared with cabinet, has gone through a cabinet, was accepted in cabinet as a true reflection of what is happening within the state. So, Chairperson, I have two colleagues who are going to lead the presentations. First is Mr. Tuzi Bonga, who is going to deal with Operation Pakisa, and will be followed by Mr. Zakede Mdalose, representing the colleagues in the branch, sector monitoring. And I understand that after the two presentations, then we are going to take questions, and I will request different colleagues to also engage with yourself and respond to some of the questions. Now, with your permission, Chair, I will ask Mr. Mpunzi Bonga to start with the presentation, and then Mr. Mdalose will follow, and then all of us are going to engage with yourself. Thank you.
No, thank you, Mr. Bonga.
Thanks, DG. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members, as well as PME colleagues. I have tried to share my presentation. I hope it's visible from that side.
Yes, very visible.
Thank you, Chair. The first slide is nothing but an explanation of what transition-based methodologies seek to achieve, in that they try to deviate from incremental development along a business as usual trajectory by ensuring that through collaboration, engagement, and changes in behavior, we learn to improve performance by inducing certain complex guidelines of socioeconomic change. This is exactly what Operation Pakisa sought to do, to disrupt the business as usual approach so that we are all able to fast track implementation of government programs. I must indicate that I'm going to talk through the presentation. I'm not going to go through it bullet by bullet, but I'm going to talk through it. The second slide, honorable members, is the introduction. This slide seeks to show the interrelatedness of the application of the methodology with the entire government planning hierarchy, with the MDB being on top of that hierarchy, as the MDB seeking to significantly change the fortunes of South Africans by 2030 by resolving the triple developmental challenge. Immediately below that is what MTSF, which is an attempt at implementing the MDP in 5-year chunks. So this is our medium-term plan, which seeks to ensure realization of MDP outcomes, but it's, the MDP outcomes are broken into 5-year chunks. Now, when we get to the methodology is nothing more than the methodology that seeks to fast-track what is contained in the MTSF so that we can speed up the realization of the MDP outcomes. When we implement this methodology, it also gives impetus to government's plans to meet its constitutional obligations to ensure better service delivery to its citizens. When correctly applied, the methodology can significantly contribute to the realization of economic growth and job creation targets. The next slide is a detailed explanation of the methodology, the Operation Pakisa methodology, which is based on the DFR methodology. We there outline how the methodology would then assist in delivering on the NDP 2030 outcomes in a way that's better, faster, and more efficient. It does so by instilling a heightened sense of urgency, promoting transparency, promoting accountability and consequence management, and so on. So far, 7 labs have been undertaken, and each led by a relevant department, and these labs, 7 labs, can be divided into the social and the economic cluster. 5 of them are in the economic cluster, also what we call now priority 2, and 2 of them, the ICT and health, are in the social cluster, which is priority 3. And some of what these labs seek to do contributes to the realization of priority 1 and 5 objectives. The next slide is an outline or a list of the labs undertaken so far, ranging from the oceans economy, which was the first undertaken in 2014, to the last that was undertaken, the chemicals and waste, or what is called the circular economy. Those are the focus areas. And at the bottom, you have what we labeled as enablers, which is what the skills development and capacity building, research, technology, and innovation, respectively led by DHET, Science, Technology, and Innovation departments. All those focus area labs are led by specific departments which are relevant and are supposed to coordinate their implementation. As indicated by the DG, the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation is just the custodian of the methodology, provides oversight, and gives leadership. But then the actual implementation of the outcomes of the various labs is led by specific departments that are relevant to the achievement of the various lab outcomes. The next slide talks to the theory of change. This is an explanation of how, after the labs were undertaken, Operation PAGISA sought to bring about changes in the lived experiences of South Africans. On your extreme right, you've got impact, which is fed upon by medium-term outcomes, 2 of them, and respectively, those are also have their own short-term outcomes that feed into them. From on your extreme left, you've got what we call critical success factors. Those are what is written in red there, the red font, which is your political will and ownership, and stakeholders should share common objectives and should be willing to collaborate. There should be sufficient available funding both from the private sector and the private sector and the public sector, and there should be sufficient skilled resources to implement those. Then those then lead us to inputs that are required to implement activities. Those activities is what is contained in the detailed 3-foot plans that are a result of intensive conversations that are headed left by multiple stakeholders ranging from public sector, private sector, and higher education institutions or academia. The implementation of those activities is supposed to lead to achievement, as the attainment of certain outputs which contribute then to short-term, medium, and medium-term outcomes realization, and then the impact. The next slide is further explanation of the theory of change. At impact level, the methodology sought to increase the capacity of the state to deliver in an equitable, effective, and accountable fashion to ensure developmental outcomes that improve the lives of South Africans. And to achieve that, there needed to be 2 things in place. Firstly, sustainability of the BFR methodology applications throughout
the multi-sector, through the sector, across the multi-sector in implementation, which means the transitioning to business unusual approach should then transform into a more effective and sustainable way of doing government business across all sectors throughout government, so that we can then achieve that which I have just said. There needed to be an enhanced stakeholder alignment to the MDP MTSF development agenda, as well as buy-in and commitment from all stakeholders to accelerated and equitable service delivery approach. Secondly, in order to achieve the impact, we needed to have strengthened sector response to key national developmental priorities, as outlined in both these two documents, the NTP and MTSF. Now, the next slide sets the scene for the actual report. I am of the view that the DG summarized the contents of this slide when he indicated what context the report that has been compiled, what was the context when implementation took place. This includes sustained levels of low economic growth and low labor absorption, structural rigidities that various stakeholders have highlighted and complained about. Levels of inequality remained high and inclusivity remained a challenge. And the problem with fiscal constraints that government experienced, which then limited its ability to direct intervention programs, thus compounding the same triple developmental challenge that the NTP wants to speed up to resolve. But implementation continued, and despite the fact that we had envisaged and succeeded in ensuring that the methodology is part of government planning hierarchy, particularly the ministerial performance agreements, significant challenges were experienced, illustrated by failure of various departments to implement and report, despite repeated interventions by the DPME, both at DG and ministerial level. Now, the actual report begins here. This slide highlights certain achievements that the methodology has managed to achieve from 2014 to date. And since the subject of the discussion was supposed to be whether the jobs that were supposed to have been created are being created, the first few slides talk to how many jobs were created in 2019 versus the investment that was attracted. At the height of things, the methodology attracted 41 billion investments and 8,000 jobs were created in 2019. Investment continued to reduce through 2020 and 2021, resulting in it becoming 5 billion in 2021 and 7,320 jobs that same year. And then at the time of writing this, when we requested, we had the first half of 2022 report, which is what this report talks to. At that time, only 2.04 billion investment was attracted and about 2,300 jobs created. And then the remainder of this goes to the ocean's economy, what it has achieved in various areas. Of significant importance is the last bullet. That talks to 51.7 billion investment that is likely to materialize in 2026 when the development of the Block 11B and 12B in South Coast intensifies towards production. And so on, these achievements go on to other areas like biodiversity, economy, from here on, we talk about each and every one of the labs, starting with the Oceans Economy, which was initiated in 2014. Its MTSF targets are as outlined in the slide: 144 billion GDP contribution, 55 billion investment attraction, and 111,000 jobs by 2024. These are the MTSF 2019-2024 targets. At the time of writing this report, the performance dashboard of this lab stood at 49.7%, which is quite low as a result of the poor performance of the marine transport and manufacturing focus area, which is led by Department of Transport, and the aquaculture focus area, which is led by fisheries, forestries, and environment. This despite significantly higher performance values from marine protection and ocean governance focus area at 75% and offshore oil and gas at 85%. In terms of investment, again, low at 1.6% and jobs low at 1501. When we look at these jobs that were created at that time, comparing with what should have been achieved for half a year or biannually, these targets were undershot significantly. Because if you compare the 1.5 and 15,000, the 1.5 investment and 1,500 jobs, you would see it's significantly lower than the 5.6 billion investment and the 11,000 jobs that should be created every 6 months by this lab. However, when the development of this offshore oil and gas block 11 and 12 investment is likely to increase to 52 billion by 2026. This is further expected to increase to 172 billion when the operation transitions to production in 2027, and the socio-economic benefits resulting therefrom are 22 billion GDP growth and 81,000 jobs by 2027. This then will mean the offshore oil and gas focus area will just be 40,000 short of the jobs targets for 2030. Here is an outline, it's a pictogram of what the performance looks like. The blue indicates what needed to have been done. The green indicates what is already due based on the three-foot plan. And the next bar indicates what has been completed, which is the 49.5% that we're talking about, and 1909 jobs to the more than 50% that has not been done, and then at 25% is the completion of what was planned as a plan. What are the challenges? Why is the performance not consistent with what was envisaged? This slide highlights the challenges that have been experienced during the implementation period. One of those is the uncertainty of the fiscal regime, as well as the delays in finalizing the Petroleum Resources Development Bill, which is complicated by the litigious environment, which tends to dampen investor appetite and delay development of the upstream petroleum sector. The risk associated with those three challenges is we have identified energy security risk, local beneficiation risk, and the risk to economic revival and growth, as well as the job creation, the achievement of the job creation target. Further to that, we expect this litigious environment to delay the realization or the use of gas as transitional fuel towards net zero carbon emissions. Below that, we have the results of the ISGU monitoring vessels to the port of Cape Town, which affects the PEF area of the ocean's economy. This includes aging terminal equipment, cable theft, poor mobile harbor crane, as well as significant delays in work being undertaken in the dry docks. And then we have also advanced some interventions that we think would assist the sector speeding up their implementation and realization of their outcomes, including collaboration to expedite finalization of the bill, as well as addressing environmental concerns that tend to significantly delay development as the green revolutionaries tend to take the DMRE to court every time they are trying to do something in the upstream offshore oil and gas sector. The next slide talks to the biodiversity economy, which is the second one that is led by environment, forestry and fisheries. There is an outline of the MTSF targets, the first three bullets. In this one, the dashboard performance, which is independently managed by the DPME, based on it and the tree footprints of this layer, shows that during the first semester, performance was at 56%, rising to 61% during the second semester of 22-23 financial year. Significantly lower investment at 787 was attracted, which was then invested in various projects in various provinces. But our information reveals that no jobs were created out of that investment, and both investment and job creation undershot the biannual targets of 1.42 billion rands and 11,000 jobs. There are some highlights like the game meat strategy finalization and the donation of 12,000 game by the military to this lab for distribution to previously disadvantaged individual populations. This slide shows the performance in terms of the dashboard. As indicated, extreme left shows what needed to have been done. The next one, what is due? The 61% of due activities completed, as well as what has not been done. The ICRM and ICT labs were included for completion, but seeing as the conversation or the request was for job creation, these two labs did not seek to create any jobs, but to ensure better health and educational outcomes. So I'm going to skip the health and education lab slides to jump to the next slide, which talks to the mining lab. This lab is led by the DMRE. Multiple stakeholders in the lab decided on these as its aspirations: attracting investment, increasing R&D, increasing the number of direct jobs by almost a million, and creating some indirect jobs. However, apart from establishing the Nelson Mandela precinct, this lab has not delivered on any of its targets, despite various interventions by the DPME, both at a DG level, wherein the DG would write to that department's DG to implore them to redress what we have identified as challenges in this lab, lack of implementation, which then affects the poor South Africans. This also was taken up by the minister, but without any joy. The result of this non-implementation, or the impact of this non-implementation, is that hundreds of thousands of jobs that could have been created were not created, and thus keeping the hundreds of thousands of poor black people out of employment. another impact is that investment and growth targets were not met. At our recent interaction with this department, they had promised to start implementation, starting by establishing the relevant structures, which we had again promised to assist them in doing so. So we are in the process of reviving this and hoping that we can redeem something out of this before the end of this MTSF. The next slide talks to the Rural Economy Lab. Again, this Rural Economy Lab was established so as to contribute significantly to job creation, investment attraction to the rural areas, and by so doing, ensuring that the millions of rural South Africans that are without jobs have an opportunity to get jobs through the implementation of these lab outcomes. However, in 2019, the department watered the targets down to 3.6 billion investment and 109,000 jobs. Needless to say, this department has failed to do that at MTSF level. This is illustrated by this dashboard performance. In summary, this lab or this department had achieved 1% performance, the lowest of all those that are implementing. Now, the next slide shows in detail per focus area why the overall performance of this department remains at 1% due to non-implementation of some focus area lab outcomes and minimal implementation of others. This slide summarizes what I have just said. The challenge that we have identified with this lab is that the DAFT continues to fail to implement and attend relevant reporting structures. We had escalated this to the DG as well. The DG has written to the department. The DG has initiated meetings with that DG. We have had late night conversations with that department. And unfortunately, immediately after those meetings and commitments made, nothing happened. As a result of that, we escalated that to the minister, who has also done what he needed to do, but still, this has not resolved the problem. What is the impact of their failure? There's persistent poor coordination by the DART of this lab, of implementation of this lab outcomes, both at strategic and political level. This has significantly constrained its ability to realize both the lab and MTSF targets, so that every time this department fails to implement, that means the department actively keeps thousands of rural South Africans out of jobs. If we look at this last bullet, the support to smallholder producers was undershot by 34%, which means more than 20,000 smallholders did not receive the support they deserve. The next lab in the economic cluster is the chemicals and waste, which is also led by environment, forestry and fisheries. The poorest amongst those three that are led by this department at 22% performance, and completing only 7% of its planned activities. There are some challenges that are highlighted here, including the fact that all these three labs that are led by the Environment, Forest and Fisheries, their performance persistently declined subsequent to the untimely demise of Minister Mulewa and the departure of the previous DG from that department. which talks to lack of administrative and political ownership and support of the various labs, since these labs were the best performing labs before. Again, at the end, we highlight the impact of this lab to implement as required in terms of investment attraction, the poor people that are kept out of jobs. If we look at the various labs, the chemicals and waste economy has the lowest entry barriers. I'm sure we have experienced throughout our lives in our neighborhoods, waste people collecting recyclable waste from our dustbins and so on. So those are entrepreneurs that are able to enter this chemical and waste economy without anything in hand. So if this were implemented correctly, a lot of poor people who would not need that much capital to start these businesses would have been able to participate here. But then the failure of this department has kept those people out of this focus area as well. In this slide, we look at what are the challenges, what could have caused poor performance. One of those is poor or non-institutionalization of lab outcomes, failure of various departments to establish and resource various implementation and governance structures that are required for the successful implementation of the DFR methodology. Some departments fail to implement and fail to report. There's persistent lack of interest in mandatory review progress by lead departments. And most importantly, we've identified poor management and administration, liability and consequence management. At a higher level, we have identified lack of administrative and political ownership and buy-in. This is one of the critical success factors that we identified and discussed when we were discussing the theory of change, that there should be sufficient political ownership and buy-in at both administrative level, so as to ensure by failure of the steering committees to meet at various lead departments, failure to convene the Operation Pakisa Ministerial Management Committee, which should be reconvened by the Minister of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and failure of both the Minister of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and the President to convene the Presidential Issue Resolution Committee, so that this committee is able to resolve challenges that persist after they have been escalated to the Ministerial Management Committee for the Operation Pakisa IMC. Further to this, the previous evaluation of the Oceans Economy confirmed all these that have been these issues that have been highlighted by intervention support that have been articulated for all the seven labs has also confirmed most of these issues that we are highlighting here. Now then, we ask what needs to be done to improve performance of this so that we are able to speed up implementation, improve service delivery, and ensure speedy realization of MDP outcomes. We highlight political will and ownership so that the head of state takes full ownership and leadership of the methodology implementation, as well as ministers to be held accountable, establishment and resources of them, resourcing of governance structures, ensuring availability of funds from both private and public sector. The extent to which all of these were missing during implementation could have caused poor performance, as discussed in the previous slides. What are our recommendations? We look at the status quo, and we find that the status quo is not delivering on what was envisaged. So then we argue that it is unsustainable and we need to drastically change so that the methodology is able to fast track implementation, to speed up the reduction of the triple developmental challenge of poverty, inequality and unemployment as envisaged by the NDP. To do so, we have three recommendations. One being urgently and decisively reinvigorating implementation. We say here, departments should focus on implementation to achieve outcomes and impacts. All the lab outcomes should find expression throughout planning hierarchy, not only the ministerial and the minister planning, minister performance agreements, but the entire planning hierarchy. We need to resource implementation and governance structures sufficiently so as to drive implementation. The next main bullet talks to accountability and consequence management. To do so, we need to reconvene the Operation PAHISA IMC to resolve challenges escalated thereto. And also, we need to deal with failure to implement expeditiously across the board from the lowest ranking official to the highest ranking official. Whomever fails to do that which they need to do, need to suffer the consequences so that we are able to make the material difference that we want to make in the lived experiences of South Africa. Lastly, and at a higher level, we recommend that focused leadership be provided. This requires that once or twice per year, the president should meet with various ministers responsible for implementation to discuss the progress that's being made and where progress has not been made. And the president and the minister in the presidency responsible for monitoring, planning, monitoring, and evaluation should reconvene the presidential issue resolution committee to resolve challenges escalated thereto. Now we argue that if we accept accelerated implementation as our passport out of business as usual liturgy, we need to ensure that Operation PAHISA is infused into the delivery of specific government priorities enshrined in the MTSF and embedded in the APP. We also need to resolve the tension between the requirement that the methodology be not subjected to normal bureaucratic accountability chains, and the fact that the methodology operates within that bureaucracy by ensuring that we have ways of speeding up the reporting and escalation through the Operation PAHISA specific established governance and implementation structures, so that whatever needs to be done urgently does not get subjected to these bureaucratic accountability chains. This brings us to the end, and thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mbonga. I think we are then moving to the next presentation on MTSF.
Honorable members, the leadership of the BPME, I'm trying to share my presentation. As soon as it is there, I will commence with my presentation going forward. Appearing on the screen?
No, nothing.
No.
Let me start afresh. He's giving me a bit of a challenge here. It is showing something else that I was not trying to. I will stop sharing and restart afresh.
talks to the issues of social cohesion and safer communities. For priority 7, Better Africa and Better World, that is DERCO, DTIC, Tourism, DOJ, is part of those cohort of departments forming part of that the priority. In terms of the methodology and approach that DPME has adopted here, DPME has focused on the performance information from departments, other research and evaluation institutions to ensure that we triangulate information from administrative data to what is happening from other sources such as the STATSSA information, your human science research information is there, being reflected in the administration, in administrative data. Analysis of options and risk for remedial action is one of what we do after that triangulation has been done. So we do a follow-up on cabinet decision after we have presented some of the MTSF report during our biannual reports to the cabinet last time. So priority one, the focus of that is talking to the capacity of the state. We have outlined that the capacity of the state is at the heart of all other priorities. It should inform the social cohesion. It should inform what is happening in the human settlement. Education and skill as a contributor to economy, and all of that coming together is supposed to be driven at the heart, which is at the capacity of the state. If the capacity of the state is not working, all the other priorities cannot deliver on what is expected of them. So in terms of the key issues that have been identified for capable, ethical and developmental state, there is slow economic growth and development, which increases unemployment and poverty and reduces the ability to collect revenue and negatively impact the provision of services. Some of this has been highlighted in Mr. Bonga's presentation. The issue of the inadequate budget prioritization and result-based budgeting in the context of limited budget available to fund government activities has been identified as one of the key contributors leading to the failure. The policy and legislative incoherence and rigidity leading to path of dependence on existing institutions, such as in the state-owned companies. The poor performance of public entities that is hampering economic growth and putting strain on the fiscus. Then the misalignment of the economic policy drivers, which talks to the fiscal policy, competition policy, and monetary policy, not alike. The other areas that have been identified leading to these failures that have been identified earlier on is around the corruption and weak accountability, which erodes the capability of the state. Negative audit findings indicate regress in municipalities, as indicated in the Auditor General's report. Poor delivery in the areas of your title deeds, backlogs that have been escalating over years, leading to the people not accessing the housing or the property that they should be getting within their property markets. The progress has been identified in this area. Maybe one is not just to indicate what has been going bad. However, there is progress that has been noted. The national framework towards the implementation of professionalization of the public sector was adopted by the cabinet in October 2022. The National Anti-Corruption Advisory Council, NACAD, facilitated stakeholder engagement in the development of state capture response plan, program institutionalized professional code of ethics in public administration was successfully incorporated into the National School of Governance. Compulsory induction program was part of that enabler to have that institutionalization. Earlier on, Honorable Chairperson made reference to the district development model, which is talking to one plan development and quality assured National Integrated Plan, Honorable Minister, that has been developed and we are going to be taking care of that going forward from now and into the future. The issue of the spatial transformation in terms of how the services have been provided, the grid electrification connection has increased to 57% in households that has been electrified against the 1 million target of 5GSF. The issues of 10 cities now investing in the construction of the integrated public transport network and 7 bus rapid transit are operational, and the 8 is partially operational. That is the one in Rustenburg that has not yet been fully realized. The delivery of the subsidized houses, service sites, and rental units has increased, improving the living condition of households, although government needs to shift away from building houses, but to look at providing services or service site and the rental units. There are some work that has been done in terms of what the PME has initiated. The policy on integrated planning framework that has looked at establishing an institutional framework for new predictable paradigm and discipline within across all spheres of government. Promote better coordination and collaboration and alignment of planning, monitoring and evaluation between and across the national programs to local spheres of government, including public entities. There is a need to enhance the budget prioritization framework to influence allocations thereof. Strengthening the intergovernmental relationship on planning structural issues, as well as looking at the performance by provincial growth and development strategies to be used as a tool to improve alignment. The issues that have been identified as burning platforms, the implementation of national framework towards professionalization of public sector remains a burning platform. Leadership and accountability on performance management is also one of the areas that have been also highlighted or being made to be an example on what Mr. Bonga has presented on the Operation Pakisa issues and challenges. The areas of fighting and preventing corruption, there are 3 initiatives that have been developed in looking at strategic as well as operational levels. That is looking at a coherent presidential anti-corruption program that is having 3 levers. The first one is National Anti-Corruption Strategy, State Capture Response Plan, SIU referrals, coordinating and monitoring mechanism. That has got some reflection for the show up at different levels. That is strategic, is 10 years. Presidential Response Plan, which is looking at the interventions by the anti-corruption strategy, and the role of President DPME at the center of monitoring and accountability for the implementation of SIU recommendation. That has been now converging at a program of action that has been developed for 2023-2024, which is aligned to the ministerial priorities that have been worked between government departments as well as the president and the different ministers from different ministries. That program of action includes, amongst others, approval of the NACAC work plan, establishment of coordinating mechanisms for disciplinary action across public sector, establishment and capacitation of NACAC monitoring system. That is one of the areas that we have seen as going forward in this area. In terms of the recommendation, Honorable Chairperson, there is a need to enhance the speed of corruption-related consequence management through the allocation of designated towards the implementation process of SIU and Corruption Commission inspections. There is a need to amalgamate lower capacity municipalities, particularly those that are underfunded or struggling, to revenue to enable across across subsidization process. Rationalize and merge less optimal water bodies into larger regional utilities to expand services. There are specific recommendations that have been directed to specific departments. For human settlement and public works and infrastructure, to release strategically well-located public and privately owned land for human settlement development, and urgently look at how the rezoning is done to enhance the priority developmental areas initiatives. So now moving to priority two, that talks to job creation, with departments that have been indicated in the cohort of this area. The progress has been noted. The labor migration policy, with a strong focus on employment of locals, published for public comments. The National Employment Policy, phase two of the NDP process, that is now in the consultation stage, and moved to NADEC process. And now we are looking at how the implementation plan development has commenced. Employment Equity Amendment Bill, passed by the Parliament by May 2022. The Special Economic Zones Program has attracted over 253 investments for various sectors, with over 61 billion investment committed and a total of 19,000 jobs created for 2021 and 2022 Q3 reporting period. There was work that has been done on the revitalization of the industrial parks, implemented in 12 industrial parks over 7 provinces. Phase 1 already been completed, and phase 2 currently being implemented in the 6 industrial parks. With over 6 billion investment committed, with 46,000 jobs coming from that 6 billion rand investment, which is quite an achievement if that is realized. 7 master plans completed and under implementation. That is covering steel, automotive, clothing and textile, poultry, sugar, furniture and forestry. Then 3 master plans completed but not yet implemented. That is talking to your aerospace, tech defense, digital economy, and creative industry. All in all, we are looking at 7 master plans that has been reported upon here. The challenges that have been identified in the reimagined industrialization approach for the country through the master plans, the master plans not sufficiently clear on the role of SMEs and black companies. This is being attended to by the cluster responsible for economic transformation and job creation. Procurement regulations are not yet fully utilized to enable local content, and there is a lack of policy synergy between local content legislation. Low levels of economic growth accompanied by jobless growth over the past 10 years due to low investor confidence as a result of the poor performance in the economic sector deliverables. Most industries are characterized by barriers to entry for SMEs. Competition Commission has come up with the report to that particular effect. Inefficient network industry, which make the cost of doing business prohibitively expensive. The bureaucratic process, administrative burdens and inefficiencies, especially in obtaining operating permits and licenses, remain a deterrent to SMME development and entry to the business. The lack of access and fragmentation of markets for SMME remains a challenge. In terms of the recommendation to this particular area, it is recommended, therefore, that there is a need to accelerate implementation of structural reform on the network industry and industrialization, and to ensure policy consistency with quick follow-throughs after policy announcements. Fast track the finalization of public procurement bills and review the PPP regulation to leverage the state full buying power that is going to be utilized in ensuring that some of the areas in the labor market reforms, in that collective bargaining, how the SMMEs are going to be forming part of those, and as well as the other areas of economic development zones like your SEZ, IDZ, to the issue of the national key points. This area, honorable members of the portfolio committee, also look at the infrastructure development, which is a strong point in the South African context. The problem that has been identified here is talking to the operationalization of infrastructure fund, which was established in 2018. That could be done by enhanced blended finance capabilities, which is having 24 billion rand allocated over the NPSM period, that is 2019 to 2024. Phase one of the National Infrastructure Plan 2050 was gazetted for implementation in March 2022. The Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill on track and submitted to Cabinet in October. The National Rail Policy is expected to create policy certainty for the rail sector, and it allows for the third-party access private sector. Stock fleet renewal program is doing well with over 100. The Economic Regulation of Transport, ERT, bill has been passed by the National Assembly. The ERT will promote competitiveness of the transport sector, encourage greater competition, enable effective access to transport infrastructure, and the establishment of the transport regulator. The private sector participation framework has been developed for the rail sector, and further refinement will be concluded in December, or should have been concluded in December 2022. Presidential Commission on the Fourth Industrial Revolution report approved by the Cabinet in 2020, and strategic implementation plan finalized in March 2022. However, there is a concern about the delays in the rollout of these recommendations. Spectrum auction concluded for more than 14.4 billion revenue collected. Having outlined the progress in this sector or in this area of the economic development, there are challenges that have been identified. An action plan to end load shedding announced in July 2020 is under implemented by the National Energy Crisis Committee, and performance thereof remains a challenge. Slow implementation of infrastructure constraints due to funding mechanisms, misalignment between infrastructure and budget facility for infrastructure has been identified. Energy unavailability, a single biggest risk to doing business in South Africa, impacts on the investor confidence and a constraint to industrialization. The rail sector is facing a red flag due to inadequate investment in infrastructure, compounded by the infrastructure theft and vandalism, which is quite rife across the Republic. The poor performance of Transnet freight rate impacts on achieving meaningful change in cargo transportation from road to rail, and attaining this MTSF target seems to be elusive as a result of that. This results in increased traffic on the road, leading to congestion, accidents, and damage to the road infrastructure. Finalization of power purchase agreement under the bid window 5 has delayed, and there is a 2-year lead time to reach commercial operation and connection to the grid. With each bid window that has been reviewed or looked at over time, the sense of reliability on the TFR network has reduced tremendously. Delays in the digital migration hinder on the realization of full benefit of spectrum auction. Analog switch off has also not been finalized. This provides uncertainty in the market for this particular area. The recommendation that has been developed in response to this infrastructure issue are as follows, or cover the following areas. An urgent intervention is required to resolve the funding flow with regards to infrastructure fund in order to avoid delays on the implementation of projects. That covers project implementation, funding flows, as well as the closure of the project as they've been finalized. Evaluation must be undertaken for energy infrastructure reform impacts, and South Africa needs to fix its rail and port system urgently to be able to take full advantage of any future economic opportunities. That is talking to our trade capability, the movement of goods inside the country, as well as the citizens from point A to point B. There is a need to be an urgent replacement of copper in the rail network to cap theft. There are some pilot work that has been done with the Tiger Works in the central region and the corridors that are associated with it. The private sector participation in transport sector must be fast-tracked to enable third-party access to slots and routes in order to utilize more rail corridors. This will curtail issues of theft and vandalism as less route will lie dormant. Fast-track the implementation of digital economy master plan and investment in digital infrastructure will enable this economy to grow quicker than expected. Effective implementation of SA Connect must be fast-tracked to ensure that all sites are connected and the objectives of the programs are realigned. Then, that concluded the area on the infrastructure-related issues. Now we get to the rural economy and environment. Mr. Bonga was focusing on most of what is happening in this area. That is going to now zoom into the actual bolts and nuts of what is happening and how those have been leading to the reflection of what he has indicated in his presentation. The progress in this area, there are around 781,000 hectares of the land, which is 78%, that has been allocated against the target of 1 million for this contested period. And it has to be noted, however, that out of that, 0.63 of the land was allocated to women and 0.9 to youth. That is not yet addressing the key targets that we set ourselves as a country to reach that. Hence, women and youth are the ones that are supposed to be given a priority in this area. There is a need to ramp up that work. Then the Land Expropriation Bill to replace Expropriation Act of 1975 has been presented to the Parliament in September 2022. More than 8,000 hectares of that degraded land has been rehabilitated back to production. There's a great work that has been done in this area, honorable members. The drier areas around Fed and Dal due to the irrigation system that has been developed there has changed that area drastically from being economically barren to thriving economy for the tomato as well as the grape production. Cumulatively, a total of 146,000 hectares has been rehabilitated, which translated to 97 of the target that we set ourselves for 2024. The process to institutionalize and implement a special development framework and implement national special development framework zones was approved by the cabinet in March 2022 and has started to move towards implementation. There are different areas that have been identified for that area. In Limpopo, the Makato one, the Val in Free State, bordering in Gauteng, those are the ones that have been started and we are looking for monitoring them closely in terms of what they are going to deliver for the country. The significant strides have been made towards just transition in terms of the job resilience plan for energy, transport and agriculture, including the green hydrogen and electric vehicle projects. The renewable energy has been highlighted earlier on as one of the key areas that can be utilized to address the energy shortage in the country. Having outlined the progress in this area, there are some challenges that have been identified. But the different viewpoints on spatial planning and land use management remain a challenge with negative implications for its implementation.
that is talking to the ways in which different government departments with their constituencies are looking at SPLUMA, the issue of the traditional leaders looking at how the SPLUMA is affecting their viability to manage their areas that has been given to them. The inefficient community property associations, CPAs and trusts, leading to infighting amongst the land beneficiaries and non-productivities of those lands that have been restored through the land reform programs, has been identified as one of the challenges that needs to be looked at. Some environmental authorization are not finalized within regulated time frame, leading to the delays in the work that's supposed to be done or to the investment that's supposed to be getting off the ground. There are some issues on the inadequate and fragmented implementation of the rural development policies. Then a comprehensive rural development plan has been developed with the Department of DARAD working on that and is taking that work to the consultation processes and to the parliamentary as well as cabinet processes. Uncoordinated spatial transformation and developmental tools remains a challenge in terms of the country realizing the spatial capabilities of the areas that they are having. There is an inadequate utilization of the environmental management framework, inadequate utilization of the NSDF in informing the planning happening at the IPP as well as the capacity at the local or coal phase level at the district as well as the local municipalities or local government sectors. Sector emission targets and national determined contribution not yet utilized for performance and progress reporting, which is talking to the just transition and climate change response by the country. The recommendation has been provided in this regard. There is a need to expedite Communal Property Act amendments to deal with, amongst others, the duplicate committees on land reform and other inefficiencies in that act, leading to those infighting as well as the delays in the use of the post-settlement issues that enable agriculture on the restituted land. But track land acquisition and disposal, post-settlement support aligned to strategic commodities as well as the master plan and spatial analysis. The master plan has been identified as the key area of development to this country going forward. And if that is not aligned to what has been acquired and the support, there might be a misalignment in terms of how those master plans are going to be getting expression on the ground. A budget allocation to all government programs will also be informed by the spatial analysis and spatial capabilities. If that is not done, we might find the mismatched development that is not aligned to what the spatial capabilities of the areas are, leading to constrained development. Now to priority 3, education, skills and health. The progress has been identified in this area. The migration of early childhood development from basic education to social development, though resources are challenging going forward, that process has started, but it's not properly resourced to realize the work that it should be realizing. And the effect of that can be even realized in terms of how are we developing our young ones to read and understand the recent report on the those that are age 4, which is unable to read with comprehension. That is as a result of what we have invested in the ECDs, which might be felt across the education system of our kids. Increasing quality passing. South Africa is on a positive trajectory in terms of bachelor passing, with the targets exceeded, and math and science students scoring above 60%, which is improving, and the target that has been set of 35,000 is likely to be reached. So meaning we are getting into that STEM, and we are getting there very quick if we can put a little bit of effort going forward.
Increasing access is one of the areas that has been looked at to show off progress in the education space. The cost of higher education as a barrier is being reduced by funding eligible national student financial aid schemes, the NSFAS students, so that they can remain within the education. With the sustainability of the missing middle not covered, there is a need to look at that, though that work has been showing some green shoots. University enrollments are increasing, but the percentage of adults with degrees is still low to support knowledge economy. We have indicated that education is critical in the first line that we've provided for economy. If we are not having proper skills, then our economy are not going to be taking advantage of that. The challenges that have been picked in this area, honorable members, there is a weaker learner performance in mathematics, science, and languages, as shown in the international assessment. I've made reference to that at some stages. There is still slow eradication of infrastructure backlogs in our schools. Schools' ICT connectivity for teaching and learning is very low. It's around 20% overall. There is an urgent need to ensure that all schools are ICT connected, especially in rural schools, supporting learning and teaching. Shortage of special schools for learners with disabilities has been identified as one of the challenges. And unsustainable post-school education and training, student funding, we have highlighted that in the movement towards the missing middle. The low throughput on enrollment to TVET colleges, not supplying technical skills needed by the economy. South Africa needs a productive skill base, which we are not catering for at this stage from our TVET system. Only 43% of children in South Africa are ready to be at school by the time they reach age 5. On track on physical growth and early learning. There is limited efficiency in quality in the production of graduates of both basic education as well as at the PSET level. And the challenge of the low labor absorption rate of the TVET college graduate, which is going to constrain the uptake or the demand of this TVET if they are not going to be absorbed into the labor markets, the graduates coming from there. The recommendation has been provided, however, after having provided a picture of what is happening there. The migration of ECD to DBE must focus on increasing access as well as providing comprehensive and quality ECD with appropriate resources. Incentives for private sector support accelerated schools' connectivity in the shorter time. And there is the need to finalize student funding policy by 2023-2024. That is sustainable aligned to economic skills needed with income contingent loans, incentive for graduating on time, and for private sector to fund more students. Sector must develop programs that make education social issues as a way to improve quality and protect resources in the sector. Then that has concluded the area on education. Now the health area. There, the key was looking at achieving universal health coverage through national health insurance. So the progress on the NHI, National Health Insurance, declared desirable by the Parliament in May 2022. The close-by-close review of the NHI bill was completed in November 2022. The building blocks of an NHI system already in place. The health patient registration system has registered more than 59 million people. National Human Resource Plan completed in 2020. Over 47,000 community health workers appointed to support community-based primary care. This is one of the achievements that enabled the foundation for the NHI implementation. Having indicated those progress, there are some challenges that have been identified in this area. that two MTSF 2019-2024 targets were missed over the midterm period. These are the NHI farm should have been operational by December 2020, but that has not happened. The NHI farm should have started purchasing services by 2022-2023, that has not yet happened. The target of 75% of South Africans should be covered by NHI by 2024, and that is unlikely to be achieved at the rate of which things are happening. The NHI bill is still in the parliamentary processes, not concluded, whilst we already started the 2023-2024 financial year, meaning we might miss that target as well if the parliamentary process is not fast-tracked. The recommendation to this regard, honorable members, that they need to develop and implement publicly visible national quality improvement plans to improve the quality of health services. This is one of the stated conditions for the successful implementation of the NHI. Commission a state readiness assessment for the NHI post-COVID era in South Africa. The next area out of the NHI is looking at the life expectancy of South African at birth. The progress to date indicates that the health outcomes are improving against the 2022. The SSA has indicated that improvement. An average life expectancy at birth increased from 61.9 years in 2021 to 62.8 years in 2022. For both male and female. The under 5 mortality has improved from 35.2 deaths per thousand in 2020 to 30.7 deaths per thousand in 2022. The target of the MTSF is likely to be met in this area. Then 51.3% of adults South Africans are vaccinated against COVID, which was against a target of 70% by December 2021, an increase of 1.3% compared to 50.6% in June 2022. Having indicated those progress in the life expectancy, there are some challenges that have been identified. The significant variation in health outcomes between provinces, including life expectancy and the severe acute malnutrition case fatality rates have been identified as a challenge, meaning there are differentiation in terms of how the provinces are managing or the life expectancy coming from different provinces in this country, yet we are the one country. There are provinces with more, others with less life expectancies. Medical legal claims amounting to 124 billion are consuming resources meant for health service delivery, which is going to affect the health outcome of the country in terms of improving the life expectancy and death. Treasury data reflects that health budgets in real time inflation adjusted are likely manageable for the financial year 2022 to 2034. However, there is a large real decline in 2023-2024 compared to the pre-COVID levels of 2019-2020. However, there are some recommendations that have been put forward to try and address these issues. There is a need to track variation in health outcomes between provinces to ensure equity. The post-COVID strengthening of the health system is imperative. To the extent possible, healthcare workers appointed as part of COVID-19 response should be retained within the system. Health sector and the Department of Justice should report on the implementation of its medical legal strategy to FOSAT and Cabinet Committee on a quarterly basis. There is a need to protect the health system from deep budget cuts, because if we are experiencing cuts there, it means we may end up missing most of the targets that we've set ourselves as a country in that one. That has concluded the priority three, honorable members of the committee. Now, in terms of priority four, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services, there are progresses that have been identified in that area. There is an increase in the access to to social assistance. 7 provinces with an exception of Western Cape and Gauteng have at least 1 in 2 people receiving social grants. Which Limpopo at 71% for social assistance in all grants, including the social relief of distress. That is a reflection of that spatial inequality that has been reflected in some of the work that was shown in Priority 1 work. South Africa has achieved universal access to basic education with 98.3% of 5-year-old children attending educational institutions. Basic services to 2.2 million indigenous houses receive free basic water services, 1.8 million receiving free basic electricity.
I'm not sure whether it's network or there's a problem with them.
Chairperson, if we have challenges, we have colleagues who are responsible for the areas. So whenever Mr. Mkhalosi experiences problems, I would ask that the relevant outcome facility does take over and just continue with their work because they are responsible for the specific areas. So that we can save our time, Chair. The one we're dealing with now is social wage. There is Ms. Josephine Schlophe, who can come in and just continue with the presentation, but that is the area. So let's see what is possible, Chair, so that we don't get stuck with time.
No, that will be fine. It's an order, DJ.
Okay, thank you, Chair.
Yes.
Ms.
Sapu,
can I ask you to continue with the presentation on
Priority
4?
Thanks, DJ. Is it possible for it to be loaded?
So there is a request if Secretariat could assist us.
Please load.
I'll share the rights, Honorable Chair, through you to the team in terms of department, so they can actually upload the presentation.
Anyone who can quickly assist?
Yes, Ms. Lope, Masi will assist the Secretariat of the Portfolio Committee.
Can we just advise the department to actually load the presentation? I've shared the right to present for them to present the presentation.
Thanks, Chair. We'll do that. Ms. Lope, please load the presentation on your own. You now have the right.
Colleagues from DPME, please assist. I have opened so many and I'm not sure which the correct one is. I apologize, colleagues. I did not expect this to happen. I apologize profusely, honorable members. Colleagues from DPME, anyone who can quickly assist? Anyone assisting or Zakele is started screen. Please, Zakele, I will.
No. Don't present if you have challenges. We are trying to find a way.
Just share the screen, Zakele. It's fine. I'll present. Office of the DDG, is there anyone who's got the presentation to quickly load? Zakhele, please stop sharing.
Okay, please go to priority 4 quickly. Mr. Bonga said, thanks. Please go to priority 4.
Go down, colleague, please. Priority fighting and preventing corruption. Is it the same with others, or it's my Pumzi?
I think the priority 4 is in page 21, according to the presentation that has been sent to us.
Okay, so let me do this, colleagues. Let me just go straight to slide 21. Here, and then maybe the honourable members could still be using their presentations that have been sent to them. Meanwhile, whilst we sort ourselves out, so the progress that had already been mentioned was the fact that we've been able to increase access to social assistance. And what is important to note here is that as South Africa, at least one in two people are receiving social grants, with Limpopo having the highest percentage of people on social grants. And we already know that there are more people on grants than people who are employed, and that the state is spending almost 60% of non-interest payment on the social wage in general. South Africa has has achieved universal access to basic education, which is a good thing. Basic services also a huge increase, even just this these years of the MTSF. There has been an explosion of public employment, particularly through the presidential employment scheme, and we've been able to migrate ECD from DSD to DBE. The challenges are with the payment of the of social assistance itself. Even though each and every beneficiary gets the money in their card, it is cashing that money that is a challenge. That still needs to be looked at. There are long queues. Most of the time, the South African post office is offline, so people are not able to get their money. Then there are issues of security, both the security feature of the card itself, but over and above that, security in terms of cash in transit highs, particularly at pay points.
then the slow policy making by the various departments responsible for social security, and that has an impact in the provision of the social welfare in particular across provinces. There's inefficiency and past dependency. UIF targets have not been met. We've been trying to improve the system. It's still not where it's supposed to be. The road accident fund has a huge deficits, but over and above that, there is a challenge with a reporting, and they are using an accounting standard that has not been approved here in South Africa by the bodies that approve accounting standards. Then there's huge underfunding generally of the social welfare space. We will all remember the Nawongo case, where government was reminded that NGOs are doing what government is supposed to do, and therefore they should be adequately funded. We do not have enough shelters for victims and survivors of gender-based and violence, and we do not have enough social welfare practitioners. The National Development Plan is proposing that for optimal coverage, we need to have at least 55,000 social welfare practitioners, but we only have 18,300 in the system. There are attempts to deal with all of this. Now, the unfortunate thing is that because of this inoptimal social protection policy and poor quality of the social wage in general, there are studies that indicate that on average, an adult in South Africa reaches only 43% of its potential productivity. Next slide, please. I'm now on slide 22. So what needs to happen, therefore, if we are to improve the impact of this very generous social wage that South Africa offers, is to, one, fast track the various policies that are not being finalized in the various departments. The white paper on social welfare, the comprehensive social security framework, the social insurance for atypical and own account workers, coverage for the 18 to 59. What we have currently is the social relief of distress grant, which was introduced with the advent of COVID. We need to find out what needs to happen post, because right now it's being approved on a year-by-year basis. There is need to have a permanent feature or income support for the 18 to the 59, particularly because we realize that the economy is not going to be providing for at least a year or two in the next period enough jobs or income possibilities for a large number of the productive population. We need to finalize the policy on homelessness. The sector should establish a social protection register using the unique identifier, our unique ID, which we get at birth. We should be able to trace from birth to death, literally, people's access to the social wage if we are to improve the quality of the populace. We must urgently review the road accident fund operation model, and we must resolve the grant payment challenges. On slide 23, spatial integration, human settlements, and local government. Kifiwe, are you present? Can you take this?
Yes, I'm present. Yes, I can
thank you very
take
much.
The presentation.
Thanks.
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the DG and DDGs and colleagues. Priority 5, it covers the progress in terms of the priority development areas. There is an increase whereby there are 54 integrated.
Problem of network and low shedding. It is one also to take over from Kifilo.
Let me quickly do it if Zakhele or Kifilo are not present. So the progress here is that there has been an increase in investment in the priority development areas that are aimed at reducing spatial inequality, so redressing the space from the apartheid spatial planning. There's been an increase in the number of households assisted to purchase units through FIPS, and then the performance for housing opportunities has improved by 52% in April and September. So the recommendations, the challenges, sorry, it goes progress, challenges, and then recommendations. The challenges are that since 2019, there's been a decline in delivery on the provision of adequate housing, and unfortunately, demand for housing has been increasing due to in migration, the reduction of household size. There's a slow progress in land rezoning, meaning that the housing delivery is not going to happen. The slow progress in the upgrading on informal settlements, the systematic issues in the title deed value chain are still not being resolved. There's a failure to regulate land and property markets, forcing the cost of housing to increase, meaning that many poor and working class households will continue, one, not being able to afford housing, two, to live on the edge or of cities, increasing their transport work to transport costs. There are block projects, the risk of financial and credibility loss, the delay in beneficiaries accessing quality shelter. So the recommendations, therefore, is that we need to unlock implementation and upscale upgrading of informal settlements. We resolve the issues that are blocking progress. We must urgently address the systemic issues contributing to the growing title deed backlog, looking at best practice models. We must review the regulation of land prices to support the functioning of property markets, but also to help redress a space. Next slide. On local government, there has been a good news. We've increased grid connections. We've managed to even increase electrification of households, even through non-grid mechanisms. That's a really good progress there. On public transport, 10 cities have invested in the construction of public transport and networks, and there are 8 bus rapid transit systems. They prioritize rail network and corridors,
and they are being restored. There's an integrated public transport network that contributes to a spatial a transformation, because if you cannot move everyone, at least enable people to access economic opportunities by providing cheap, reliable and safe public transport systems. On water sanitation, we've increased their additional bulk water supply projects that were completed, three. We've managed to provide adequate sanitation for 84.1% of households. And we've also ensured that there's regular refuse removals for 16.3% of households and nationally. The challenges are the delay in the rollout of the Municipal Electric Infrastructure Asset Management Framework, which is meant to assist municipalities facing an increasing a problem of aging and deteriorating infrastructure. We have been slow in maintaining and refurbishing municipal electric networks, and this has led to constant interruption of electric city services. So it's on this side, it is the load shedding, on the other it's just interruption because of aging infrastructure, and in some cases the issues of poor governance. We've not been able to eradicate the bucket system, and we have been ineffective in many in section 139 interventions, and largely due to a lack of political will to implement the turnaround strategies designed to address institutional weaknesses. So what are the recommendations? One, we must expedite the finalization of the Intergovernmental Monitoring Support and Interventions Bill to address the number of distressed municipalities, and that number is increasing, unfortunately. We must have a coherent framework developed to strengthen coordination and collaboration with sector departments and supporting provincial counterparts in the development and monitoring of financial recovery and turnaround strategies for municipalities. And we must conduct cost-benefit assessments of the IPT and in cities to assess the feasibility and whether this is socially beneficial and profitable. Next slide, please. On social cohesion, progress, the cabinet has approved the integrated crime and violence prevention strategy. There's a police visibility, and a survey shows that 72.4% of respondents indicated that they've seen a police patrolling. There has been 8 special commercial crime courts designated, which is 3 more than the target, to deal speedily with economic crimes. And we've seen a huge number of subs and new recruits enrolled in 2022. The challenges include the fact that there's been increase in reported crime, and yet the target was to see a reduction. Two, the green shoots in terms of recovery of money and assets is very, very small. It's just 15 million against a target of billions. It's really, really small. The cost of securing cable infrastructure it distracts resources from other critical security services. And this is a huge a challenge, impacting negatively also in terms of economic growth. And we've seen from the social wage presentation and the economic sector presentation just how much jobs are needed if we are to progress and move people so that they can have the dignity of work. There are porous borders and illegal immigration, limited budget just within the class that we deal with crime and corruption. There's serious organized crime that continues to be a threat to state security. There's the survey of perception and experience of the public on the quality of services rendered by SAPS shows that less than half of the population has confidence in the police, and that is a serious a problem. There's lack of implementation and synergy on the crime and corruption, and as well as the capacity of the security cluster remains inadequate generally, but particularly in terms of cybersecurity. Next slide, please. So what are we recommending? We must enhance visible policing. We must improve environmental design to address crime. South Africa must improve its border management and safeguard its territorial integrity. Extremely, extremely important. The sector must consider digitization as a means to compensate for skills shortage. The appointment of the 200 members for the Border Management Authority is great, but there more should be done in terms of the other aspects of Border Management Authority. And then all departments in the cluster are facing capacity constraints. Therefore, there is need to develop a toolkit, which DPME is doing, to obtain an in-depth evaluation to assist departments in this sector to make sure that whatever interventions are developed within the constraints that we have are able to be impactful. Next slide, please. On social cohesion, on fostering constitutional values, the hate speech crime bill is being processed. And then the ministerial circular directing the recital of the preamble of the constitution in schools has been distributed. We are yet to find out whether schools are reciting the preamble of the constitution during assemblies as proposed by the National Development Plan. The National Development Plan says this is important because it is a preamble of the constitution that summarizes who we are as a South African in all our diversity. The three heritage projects, as we move on to heritage redress, have been completed. The Swinnie Mandela House, Kananda Memorial Site, and the OR Garden of Remembrance. And the nine provinces are rolling out a digital platform for interactive engagement between government and communities to encourage a positive active citizenry. Challenges are we are failing to foster the knowledge of the constitution, and hence we've got persistent racism, sexism, and poor adherence to the rule of law. Privilege attached to race, class, space, and gender has not been reversed. Very slow redress, whether you look at it economically, whether you look at it space, look at land, whichever way, it's really, really slow. There's a prevalence of socioeconomic inequalities. Historical legacies and patriarchal systems remain intact, and there are inadequate engagements with society, promoting constitutional values and advocacy for in an inclusive society. So many people feel excluded, they feel unheard, and it is for that reason that they start to slash and burn. If they are worried about service delivery, they start burning a library or a school. So because they feel unheard, so this must change. Next slide, please. So recommendations: accelerate a redress, whether it is land reform, whether it is ensuring access to equality, a social wage, so that people believe they belong, they see that they belong in this South Africa of ours. We must focus on consolidation and transforming existing infrastructure rather than building new monuments. And this is informed by the fact that the monuments that we build are small and they are of poor quality when compared to the giants of, let me make an example of Fort Lega Monument, which you can see whichever direction you are in Pretoria. So let's rather transform those existing infrastructure to show the entirety of South Africa and consolidate and ensure quality delivery, as well as improve audience and development. We must foster constitutional values. We must position cultural development not just for culture, but also for economic development. Tell our stories in a way that improves jobs and the economy. We must finalize the Employment Equity Amendment Act. This, we are very pleased to report that this has already been done. We must ensure social competency so that we are able to bring everyone together under one a flag. Next slide, please. A better Africa and a better world. Colleagues, I'm continuing. The owners will then respond during a question time, just to save on time. We are happy to report that South Africa's investment conference went extremely well, and there are commitments of 1.14 trillion, representing almost 100% of the 1.2 trillion target that we had. We've seen the increase in intra-Africa trade through the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Agreements and the negotiations on tariff offers, rules of origin, and so on are going on relatively well. The challenge is the current security circumstances in SADC. It has serious implications for the movement of people as well as the economic situation of the region. The inability to attract adequate investment to reverse the economic downturn, the declining growth in developed economies, the volatility of the rand, etc., all of that has caused a very negative impact for South Africa. COVID-19 has hampered initiatives to increase the value of export, facilitated through the Export Marketing and Investment Fund. There's need for cooperation between South African Airways and other airlines to create a pan-African airline that can benefit South Africa, the region, and the continent in boosting tourism. The current demise of the aviation sector through the collapse of SAA, amongst others, has negatively impacted on the South African tourism sector. Hopefully, this will be a turnaround as South African Airways rises from the ashes like a phoenix. Recommendations regarding the SACU tariff offer engagement. SACU should continue with the aim of finalizing the 90% tariff offer for verification and implementation. Currently, there's a deficit on 28 tariff lines to meet the threshold. Secondly, South Africa must continue to advocate peaceful resolution of the Russian Ukraine a conflict. Is impacting negatively, and we all know it is threatening to even impact negatively on the AGOA trade arrangements. Development of an aviation strategy in partnership with other key stakeholders is extremely important, and a government must reassess the revised regional indicative strategic program. Next slide, please.
Slide of priority. Please continue.
Oh, okay. So, all in all, in the face of adversity arising from unemployment, poverty, and inequality, government has successfully expanded the safety net to the most vulnerable segments of society. This is not said just by us, but it is said also by a study done by the World Bank, that our social wage offerings are well targeted for the poor. Human capability is being improved through access to basic and higher education, healthcare, and social security. Colleagues, it came off on my screen. I don't know about others. Is it there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're on.
So what we can do now is just to share with your permission, ask her to just continue with this is the last slide, the conclusion slide, and just read the conclusion if we're struggling with the electronic system. And then we can hand over back to you, Chair, to then preside. Just read what we have.
That's the conclusion, yes. On the targets, we're falling behind on elimination of poverty. The percentage of the population living below the food poverty line has grown from 20.5% in 2011 to about 32.6% currently. We are failing also in the reduction of inequality. Though we haven't had studies recently, we can just hope that it's stagnant at best, but looking at the fact that we have not been able to create jobs, and jobs, wage income is one of the biggest contributors to inequality, it does look like we are not moving positively in that direction as well. We have not created the 11 million jobs or the target of the NDP. We therefore propose that we must do more to create a capable and developmental state. We must use all possible possible instruments, policies, human resources, etc., to improve energy security. We must implement the many structural reforms that we've been talking about, including ensuring policy consistency. We must dedicate focus on youth unemployment. We must enhance visible policing to, amongst others, try and reduce crime. We must ensure that South Africa is able to define and articulate its national interests right across, maintain its border and domestic security to safeguard her territorial integrity. And lastly, we must implement a just transition strategy that is funded and promoted via the DKIDAL plan. Thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think that is the end of our presentation. Thanks. And we apologize very much for the technical glitches that we experienced along the way. Apologies.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lope, and also thank you very much to all the presenters. Your presentations were detailed, but I understand there was an issue by Honorable Graham that some of the slides in the first presentation were not included in the presentation that has been sent to us, but I understand that ODG will respond on that concern. And now I'm gonna take hands, honorable members, from the presentations. I can see three hands. I will start with Honorable Kibi, and followed by Honorable Makuluwa, and then Honorable Maneli, then Honorable Samantha Graham Mare, and then Honorable Maluma. Honorable Kibi, followed by Honorable Maglua, Honorable Samantha, Honorable Maneli, then Honorable Malumani. Those are the only hands, colleagues. You can end on Kevi. That's your platform.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you so much. Let me welcome and appreciate the presentations by the department. Honorable Chair, it's really a goodbye presentation. Well informative, and thank you so much. Honorable Chair, my first question to Operation Paikisa, can the introduction to the district development model be considered a factor that contributed to the non-implementation of Operation Paikisa and the establishment of multiple coordinating structures or methods can slow implementation as it results in duplication? My next one would be, what are the distinct features of the methodology which can enhance methods being applied since the sixth administration? On MTSS, Honorable Chair, beyond the frameworks developed and the progress made in multiple areas, can the GPME reflect on whether state capability has been enhanced in the sixth administration in practice? And the second one is, reports have been made on the non-implementation of SIU recommendations by various departments. How does the GPME ensure such recommendations are effectively implemented? And my last one is, policy formulation and legislative development in government seem to take a prolonged period, delaying much needed intervention to accelerate priority implementation impact. What measures can be infused to expedite policy development and legislative drafting? I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi, Honorable Maglua.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. From what we have here today, it's a clear indication that the GPME has its work cut out. I also want to join and say thank you for this presentation. But Chairperson, in terms of my contribution to this meeting, I want to start and make mention of Section 55 that speaks to the role of members of Parliament and our oversight over the national executive authority. And in this particular case, I also want to speak on the absence of both the minister and the deputy minister in this meeting. It's for me a very important meeting. Section 92.2 indicates that cabinet is accountable to parliament. And with due respect to the DG and his entourage, they are the accounting officers reporting to Parliament, but the minister is the accountable cabinet member, and this is a very important meeting. And when one deliver a medium framework, strategic framework, it is important for the minister to be present in this particular meeting, because sometimes you'll find, Chair, when we discuss and debate these issues, except, you know, sending notes from the gallery, the minister is to be kept accountable for these things. And I've been involved in various medium-term strategic framework meetings where we sent the departments backpacking because the minister and the deputy minister is absent. But be as it may, it also shows the undermining of this process, this important, very important process when it comes to the MTSF.
It is actually also a department that has to overlook numerous departments. And if you look at and listen what has been explained, one wonders where is the dedication of both the minister and the deputy minister to ensure that there is something happening in government departments in the nine provinces. Chairperson, may I speak to the interventions? And it will stress the point of the absence of the ministers when it comes to this issue. The DG has explained when it comes to the lab and also the Mandela precinct, where there has been interventions from his desk. They even call in the minister at the time. And be as it may, I am also cognizant to the fact that there has been redeployments, but there is something called handovers. So I also think that we should not take excuses for being newly appointed. So there has been interventions with the DG and his internal processes. This has been escalated to the ministers. Nothing of that kind. We have seen the priority one that speaks to a capable and ethical state, that speaks to the SOEs, and we've also seen again a knocking on Parliament's door for assistance through some of the SOEs. Now my point is, if we have a department planning, monitoring and evaluation, what has happened to interventions of that nature to ensure that the SOEs comply? There is also mentioning being made about a corruption in municipalities and backlogs. And maybe to that point, Chairperson, if the DG can also explain to us what is the reason for the backlogs. Is it capacity constraints? Is it lack of manpower? Whatever the case may be, I think we need some explanation on what the actual problem there is. Then also the 2019, if I'm correct, I think 2019-2024 MTSF framework, the issue surround the state capture response plan has been mentioned. My problem through you, Chairperson DG, is that in some of these recommendations, yes, some are spot on, but my problem is in some of them, there are no target dates which we can say, let's follow up on this issue or that particular issue because, yes, the target date. The previous minister in the presidency has made mention of the follow-up of cases of the state capture. To date, nothing has been said of any kind. Then there's also a question on the infrastructure development. There again, in terms of the explanation, I haven't seen any due date or a target date to deal with that particular issue. Then concerning gender-based violence, we are all aware that we have notorious high levels of rape and gender-based violence in South Africa. What is concerning is the fact that when it comes to the recommendations, there is also no permanent recommendation to say this is how we are going to deal with shelters, because I think South Africa and Africa in particular is number one in the world when it comes to gender-based violence. Then the police, also, no mentioning has been made in detail as how GPME is going to deal with the half of the nation
not having confidence, and I want to lightly explain something on my involvement in the Northwest Province with neighborhood watch as well in George. Elsewhere in the country, in Western Cape, there, you've seen neighborhood watches, you've seen them performing, and they have green lights and some white lights and all of that. We know there's an act for all of this. But where I'm involved in particular Dorp in George, the police are mostly rather chasing us, who, according to them, is unlawful with a green or a white light. So we are struggling there. So I just want to make that mention there. I am also very happy in particular to the fact that they mentioned about the study for students in terms of funding. That is good news, and I want to compliment the department for that. Now I want to raise a particular issue pertaining to social cohesion. And I like the issue of transforming and also the quality delivery thereof. But my point now, Chairperson, through you is to the DG is their role in the monument, in this particular case, the erection of a pole worth 1.7 million rand or 17 million rand, the intervention of the Department of TPM and ME, and then also the sponsorship when it comes to social cohesion vis-a-vis other countries and South Africa, the sponsorship of Hotspurs for the amount of 1 billion rand. What are you doing as DPME in those particular cases? Instead of, you know, responding, we are not aware, we haven't been informed, and this should be the dog watch and the eye for the departments to see that they are dealing with these things properly. The question around what has been said for said about a better Africa. Yes, I am concerned. One would have loved to hear words such as Ubuntu principles and so forth. But what I would like to know, what is DPME is the vision in terms of reducing food waste in South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Glua, Honorable Manelli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also take the opportunity to share to congratulate yourself on your responsibility of steering this ship of this portfolio committee and also make a commitment that you will be by your side to support. And also acknowledge the comprehensive presentations that were received to nature, and also note that they may be the last with us, but hopefully they will also find resonance in the next chapter where they are going. Chair, going to the points that I want to raise today is what are the features of the methodology which can enhance methods being applied since the SIP administration? And also, what is the impact of changes in the implementation of methodology due to leadership changes at a political level? What has been the opportunity to cope? What happens to people change with various social economic needs by end? Do they return investments in government or they go to private sector? I would also want to check whether has the department been made aware of the causes of all delay in finalizing the petroleum resources development deal, and then what are those details? And then what is the symbiotic relationship between energy production and the local beneficiation, and how can it be strengthened? And then can you MTSF chapters and since 2024 is around the corner, is the biodiversity lab close enough to achieve the target of attracting 7.1 billion in investment, both in public and private sector? If not, what are the challenges? Is it also reasonable to define the dashboard performance of the biodiversity lab as remaining low out of 50% in 2022-2023 given the economic climate in the country and around the world after the devastating effects of the pandemic? Also, is the transformation of all parts ideal targeting all provinces, or it prioritizes certain areas at present? So if all districts and provinces are targeted, we have a fair countrywide. Measures can be implemented to expedite implementation to achieve NGP type. Are recommendations made on each of these priorities pledged for by the various departments, and what are they planned for in smart way? Lastly, how effective does the insurance community implemented and resources be diverted by the sector?
Are you done, Honorable Mane?
Yes, I'm done, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. And Honorable Graham?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and congratulations on your appointment. And thank you to everybody for the presentations today. They were indeed very detailed and thorough. Chairperson, as you probably know, I'm new to the Portfolio Committee, so I don't know terribly much about Operation Pakisa. However, I would like to just raise some concerns around slide 28, which to me reflects that there's a complete failure of leadership. If we're looking at the fact that so many of these labs have not achieved their performance indicators, particularly mining, which achieved none of their indicators, and the rural economy, which only achieved 1%, there's definitely a failure of leadership here. Now, my question then is, what can be done? How do you build desire and political principles if you clearly don't have an interest in implementing a program on behalf of government? We speak a lot about consequence management in government, but what are the consequences? Are there consequences that can be doled out to the people that are not complying? Is Operation Pakisa part of a performance agreement with those ministers that are part of the program? And is there anything that we can hold them to in terms of holding them accountable for their failure to implement these issues? And then furthermore, there was one section on slide 28 that I found a little bit concerning, was where they were saying that they're looking for projects not to be subjected to normal bureaucratic accountability chains. Again, I find this very disconcerting because we can't even get political will on these projects. We can't get politicians to be involved and to make sure that the labs are functioning, but we are now looking at ways of circumventing accountability on top of that. So that is a concern. And then, you know, finally, Operation Pakisa resides in the office of the presidency. How do you ensure that the president takes ownership of this and that he is getting the other departments to act accordingly? On the MTSF monitoring reports, I'd like to make a couple of comments just from experience that I've had over the last few years. So on slide 13, reference to the Electricity Regulation Amendment Bill was made, stating that it has gone to Cabinet in 2022. That bill has been sent from Cabinet back to Parliament, but has not been tabled to the committee yet, which is of great concern, and it is having an impact on the department's ability, obviously, to deal with the electricity and the energy crisis. So this needs to be addressed as a matter of urgency. Also on slide 13, there was reference to NIP 2050 Phase 1, which was gazetted in March 2022. Please be advised that NIP 2050 Phase 2 was gazetted in October. Of the same year. So that also brings in additional implementation ideas around the infrastructure planning for the next few years. Slide 14, there's no reference there, and I'm not sure if the department department is integrating JETP, the Just Energy Transition Program. Although they have spoken about it, they've referenced it at a later stage in terms of just transition. $8.5 billion is available from our international partners group to fund these programs, and there's no reference made to that in any of the slides. So I think if we are looking at those areas of energy, we need to start looking at ways that we can leverage that money. Slide 17 speaks to, there's an error on that slide, just so you know, it speaks to migration from DDE to DSD, which is incorrect. It was from DSD. Your later slides in reference to early childhood development centers is correct, but just from that slide. Despite everything that anybody says, and that's too early to tell, it's had extremely negative consequences on the ECDs and the children that attend them, particularly in rural areas. There's been delays in funding. There's issues around positions. I'll speak a little bit more to that when I get to slide 21. Slide 18, speaking about the priorities and the recommendations. It's very concerning. On previous slides, there's reference to schools for disabled learners. There's no reference to ELFIN learners, and I think these need to become priorities because government is not implementing its white paper correctly and is not meeting its international obligations in terms of providing education to ELFIN learners and children with learners with disabilities. And that's creating a massive, massive issue. Slide 21, one in two people receiving social grants. That's listed as progress. Unfortunately, where one in eight people are paying tax and one in two people are receiving social grants, I don't think that's progress. I think it's deeply, deeply concerning and unsustainable. There's also reference to basic services of 2.2 million households. The latest stats stipulate that there are 3.6 million indigent households. Therefore, a third of our indigent households are not receiving pre-basic services, and this needs to be addressed, particularly in terms of the electricity crisis, because unless local government is implementing the pre-basic services, they're not getting the revenue for that, and we know that they are terribly underfunded and in financial disarray. Coming back to the ECD, the migration has been terrible. They have changed their payments. They have changed what they pay for. They're not allowing schools that have had principals. They say there are no principals in ECDs. So those who were earning slightly higher stipends have now been dropped to the lower stipend of a teaching stipend. It's been an unmitigated disaster. And later on, we speak about NGOs. ECDs are NGOs, they're not government structures, and so the funding for these ECDs has got to be properly addressed so that these schools are able to function optimally. Slide 24, again, money is a huge issue at local government level. Most municipalities are bankrupt or borderline bankrupt, and this is where we do need to then increase the implementation of free basic services so that there's more money available to local municipalities for service delivery. Slide 26. It doesn't help to have an objective that cannot be funded. So where we speak about enhancing visible policing, the budget for this has been cut by 3.3 billion rand in the next financial year. In other words, there is absolutely no ways we can increase the outcomes of something if we slash in the budget to that extent. So this has got to be addressed. We can't set targets that can't be backed up by budget. Slide 27 speaks about heritage legacy projects. I'd like to raise the issue of the Sarabatan Centre of Remembrance in Henki in the Eastern Cape. This project is about 10 years overdue now. The budget has gone from 170 million. It's well over 250 million, and there is no sign of it finishing any day soon. This needs to be added to, so you've spoken about the ones that have worked. We need to be following up on the ones that are still in construction mode and follow up as to why they are not being properly implemented. There has been issues between Public Works and Infrastructure and the Department of Sports, Recreation, Arts and Culture in terms of who's responsible for it. They now have a joint responsibility. But this is a very, very critical centre for the Eastern Cape, and there seems to be a lack of political will to see this being achieved. And then finally on slide 30, reference is made to the IRP. This has been promised by Gwede Mantashe, the minister, last week in his budget speech, that it will be available by the second quarter of this year, which means that any time now. But it is already 2 years late, and until that comes into effect, it's going to severely hamper our ability to deal with the energy crisis. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Honorable Maluma.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to honorable members, and let me also say congratulations on your newly elected chairperson of the committee. Let me also greet the department led by the DG. Chair, you know, to be the last person in asking questions, of other times some of the questions that you wanted to ask have been asked, so I want to repeat. So my question on the MTSF, it will be in terms of planning perspective and monitoring of the public entities, what are the key issues observed by the department resulting into poor performance of the public entities? What are the interventions the department has proposed to the executive to improve the current situation? The other one is that which departments are the main drivers to mitigate the misalignment of the economic policy? Is the misalignment due to the fact that government does not have legislation enforcing collaboration and coordination? The other one is that with regard to the district model, district development model, is the model using the intended results? Are all municipalities and provinces participating on this model? As you know, that when it comes to the issue of IDPs, we must see whether what is the province bringing, what is the municipality bringing, and what is the national bringing. The last one on the MTSF is that how best can government improve the interoperability of government system to improve planning and service across all sectors? And then on Operation Pakisa, that the question that I want to ask is that on people trained in various ocean economy fields, what happens to people trained in various ocean economy fields? Do they return the investment in them to government, or do they go to the private sector? The other one is that since doctors are trained on a yearly basis, especially in collaboration with Cuba, why is there a mal-distribution of doctors and shortage of skills when government itself is driving this process? The other one is about the 50% of schools had only one subject installed in their computers. Has the issue of schools at 50% having only one subject installed in their computers been resolved so far, or is it still prevalent? If this persists, who must take responsibility to address the challenge? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malumane. I will then give the department to respond to all questions. DG, you'll understand who's going to start, and you will then conclude after all the presenters have responded to the questions from honorable members.
Okay, thanks, Chair, for this opportunity presented to us by the committee and yourself. Chair, I'm asked to start with questions so that when colleagues answer, they answer questions that are very specific to them. I'll indicate who's going to deal with one. But there are some questions that I need to dispense with myself, if that's okay, which will work easier because we have quite a number of presenters. So I want to make sure that colleagues deal with their questions. Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah, Chair. Just to start, I am not switching on. I'm asking not to switch on my video because of the load shedding this time. I done so earlier on because there was electricity. Now, the relationship between Operation Pakisa and DDM is very important, as the Honorable Gibby has indicated, and that is what we are trying to do. In one conversation with yourself, I think in the presentation of the annual report, we indicated that we want all government projects to be specialized. So everyone who's implementing a project needs to indicate what projects are being implemented, so that even for the portfolio committee, you can know who is doing what where. So what we then did, we issued what we called a guidelines for specialization, so geolocation. Some departments have done that, some have not done that. So that is where we see the convergence between the district development, the DDM, and the operation in Pakistan, so that all operation Pakistan intervention should be specialized. So we have been calling for this, not just in that operation Pakistan, but every government intervention has to be specialized so that we can know where things are located. Now, as we come back and continue with the operation Pakistan, it will also have to fall within that basket of activities that have to be geolocated so that we can know which operation Pakistan intervention is happening where. So that there is that convergence between the two. Then with regards to the key features of Operation Pakistan that make Operation Pakistan relevant. One is that it is interventionist, or it should be interventionist. It should allow us to institute rapid interventions whenever there are challenges. Two is about coordination. That is essentially about coordination, that there should be effective and efficient coordination within the government. And the most interesting thing in this regard is that it also breaks the different spheres of government. It ensures that there is effective and efficient coordination of the work of the different spheres of government. The last point will be collaboration, that it forces collaboration. It forces us, even if we don't want to collaborate with each other. So these are some of the features that ensure that the operation in Pakistan is still irrelevant at this point in time. Now, on the LTSF questions that we have raised, that what has been done to ensure that there is capacity within the state to be able to deliver, quite a number of interventions can be highlighted. One is at the political level, that we now live in a country wherein all ministers have performance agreements, and those and their performance is assessed on a regular basis, with DPME playing a supportive role to the president, tracking the performance and also assisting the president in the development of scorecards that are eventually used in the assessment of the ministers. This may be in the early stages, but there is a sense we get that ministers are paying attention to the fact that they are being assessed for their performance. At the DG level, colleagues spoke about the professionalism, what we are doing to professionalize the public service. And as part of that process, we are also dealing with the political admin interface. There's been a point that DPSA can talk about on the extension of the tenure of DGs, because South Africa is the only country where DGs have a short contract of, say, 5 years. In other countries across the world, they are even called permanent secretaries. So those are the issues that are being dealt with in the basket of what we call professionalization, and DPSA and the National School of Government are playing a little role. The other area is with regard to clusters. We have done some analysis of the functioning of the clusters of government, and we found that clusters were not well coordinated. They were sometimes find that clusters only mean to process cap memos and do not discuss strategic issues that are coming out of our reports. So we have raised that issue as a big issue, that clusters need to be better coordinated, and that the presidency should be involved in agenda setting for the cluster. But also, in our report, we observed that clusters were not meeting, you know, like any time, cluster engagements were not taking place when you would have the economic cluster meeting with the security cluster. We don't have that. And we have recommended that we should also have activities that cut across there in different clusters. The other area that we have been looking at is across the different spheres. There is work that we are doing as DPME and also within the context of DDM to ensure that there is efficient and effective coordination across the three spheres. And colleagues, we can go into some details on what it is that we are doing there, and I would indicate who's going to speak on that. Honorable Matrua, the capacity constraints in the municipalities are varied. So, but generally what we have seen, one, there is a big challenge of human capacity, particularly when it comes to project management. You find that when you go to municipalities, in some cases there's no capacity for project management, yet the municipality has the resources to implement a program. That results in a situation where municipalities spend most of their time outsourcing. And in some cases where they outsource, you'll find that oversight is also very weak, leading to corruption and rent-seeking. But if we are required to provide some breakdown of the municipalities that we have been tracking through our LGMIM facility, we can do so. We have a localized DPME facility that attempts to do some deep dive on selected municipalities from time to time. So we are always willing to share that as we move forward to the next disposition in the new, under the new portfolio committee. Then on targets with regard to state capture, we are doing a lot to track particularly the work that should be done by government departments. So there is part of work that is done by the NPA. We do observe what the NPA is doing, but as an independent entity, we don't always interfere with the work of the NPA. And I think from time to time, the NPA is invited on its own to come to Parliament to explain its own performance. But with regard to the SIU, what we have done ourselves and the president, the other department, the presidency, is to establish a team of officials who do nothing but focus on the implementation of the recommendations of the SIU. And again, here we focus on those interventions that need to be implemented by government departments. And we can share the reports where we have been submitting back to SCOPA on what it is that the government is doing to ensure that the recommendations of the SIU are implemented. On infrastructure, there is a very elaborate and detailed presentation that can come from ESA. We also follow on that because to a large extent, ESA augments the work that we do in monitoring the infrastructure because it is essentially an infrastructure outfit and does not do other things like DPME that is focused on everything in government and in society. But from time to time, we engage with Infrastructure South Africa, and given a chance, we can have a presentation on that. We agree with you, Honorable Matua, that when it comes to GBVM, a time has come that it can't be limited to the police, what the police do, because usually that happens after the fact. We have been calling for a countrywide, society-wide approach to dealing with this important matter in line with what you've said. We have also raised this issue in social cohesion and pointed to the fact that part of the reason arises out of the challenges in the economy. So we have been raising this issue in our reports to cabinet. We are going back to cabinet next week to report on the state of performance of government for the whole of last year, and this issue will come up. We'll have to also reflect on it. Then on the issue of what's spent, what we are seeing is that whereas we engage with the department, the entities seem to be doing other things that are not always on the spotlight. There are entities that we text, and colleagues can speak about text. The entities that we that are also included in our analysis of APPs. But there are other entities that are overseen by departments, and when the departments present to us their APPs, they don't include the work of some of the entities. So given that experience, we have to improve our own oversight and ask departments as a first point of contact with the entities to do their work, to ensure that they know what the entities are doing, and they approve, first they scrutinize what the entities are intending to do, whether the interventions or activities of the entities are linked to the strategies of government. Because our understanding is that there is contact between the entities and the departments. And the question is, why are departments failing to pick some of these issues? So that whenever there are questions in public, departments can be in a position to respond. So not everything that the entities choose to do is necessarily wrong, but the long and short of the answer is that we exercise oversight on the departments. We expect the departments to do the same on the entities, so that that value chain is functional. And we have been doing our work as the PME to assess the capacity of the departments that exercise oversight on the entities. And we found that the state of capacity is varied across the different departments. There are those that have capacity and others are challenged, particularly those that have close to 10 or so entities. So that is something that we are looking at. The issue around food waste in South Africa, we have a project at DPME called Food and Nutrition, which allows us to track the extent to which government and other stakeholders support the most vulnerable in South Africa. We recently finalized a report that has gone to the VP of the country, so that as a delegated official by the president, we can interface with his office, the number two office in the country. So we do training on that. We have been engaging with some NGOs around food waste. What is it that we can do, working with a cross-section of stakeholders to ensure that food is not thrown away, but food that is not, particularly in the restaurants, factories, food, instead of throwing food once it has not been purchased, we can create a mechanism to ensure that food is given to the most vulnerable in society. It has been moving slowly because it was initiated by Gakiso Trust, and we agreed to be a participant, but we have not seen a traction, but we support something like that as a DPME. Then one issue raised by Honorable Malini on the methodology, I think you will see that in all our presentations, we start by emphasizing a methodology or the methodologies that we use, and the interesting is that everything is connected to everything in government. So there is no stand-alone project. So whatever we deal with in government, we have to be aware about the interconnectedness of issues. So that is what we always say in our presentations, to show that we are always aware whenever we deal with a particular issue, the extent to which that particular issue is connected to others. We have raised an issue even recently around a situation whereby whenever there are political changes, new ministers are appointed, then there is an attempt to change government program. So what we want to do is to ensure that there is a logging of the programs that have been approved by cabinet and by parliament, so that new ministers must continue with what has been happening, and that there must be a clear justification whenever a change is recommended or affected by the new minister. We agree on the issue of the link around energy security and beneficiation. We have been pursuing an attempt by government to ensure that there is a master plan that deals with beneficiation. This remains an important issue, and when we report on master plans, we will then deal with the progress on this particular area of beneficiation. I know it has been lagging behind, but we can provide the details on why there's not moved as fast as it should have been. Police will speak with you on biodiversity land and also on the question around the clinics, whether we are focusing on some and not the other. On the question raised by Honorable Ben on achievement of operation in Pakistan, I think we have indicated the reason why we have not succeeded in the implementation of Operation Pakistan. One is that the transition was soon followed by the pandemic, which made it difficult for us to do what we're supposed to do. But as indicated, we've done a progressive evaluation of Operation Pakistan as DPME, and out of that we have met with recommendations which we believe will ensure that Operation Pakistan is implemented in accordance with best in practice. And that goes also to the role of politicians, that there is no intention to drag politicians to operational issues. But we need operational buy-in as politicians are involved in the decisions around the plans of the departments, and thus it becomes necessary to ensure that there is always a buy-in from the politicians. So we are going to do that. The president taking ownership, that is common cause. We are in the presidency, and all what we are saying here to you, honorable members, the fact that we are frank in saying that certain things are not working is what the president has allowed us to do. That DPME must not always talk about the good things, but must also deal with the difficult challenges. So in that respect, one can suggest that the president does exercise oversight in the sense that a department located in the presidency is allowed to be as frank as possible in the public and recommend interventions that can assist us to move forward. For the electricity amendment bill in parliament, we agree that it's a very big issue and that it must be expedited and one of our colleagues will speak on this. The JET money, 8.5 billion, we can provide a progressive submission on this one, but we are obviously aware that South Africa is committed to energy transition, whilst at the same time it has to deal with bread and butter issues. So that would be DPME's understanding of government's approach to the Energy Action Plan, which was announced by the President last year, that we need to implement the Energy Action Plan so that we can deal with the immediate challenges that we're faced with, but at the same time pursue that. But on specifics, I think
yes, I'm not sure whether the DG is back.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you can proceed. We have lost you.
Oh, my apology. I'm on Honorable Graham, if that is okay, Chair. And I will conclude with the Honorable Maruman and the colleagues who speak on their specific areas. But just very quickly, all I was saying is that the achievement of Operation Pakistan, we've dealt with that in our evaluation, and we can provide more details to clarify that we're not saying that positions should be involved in operational activities, but we need their oversight in departments to ensure that departments also prioritize Operation Pakistan. And then I dealt with the issue of the president, that there is no suggestion that the president does exercise oversight. And what the president has done was to ask the DPME to speak honestly on matters that affect the performance of government and society. And that explains why we have gone to town in indicating areas of improvement and also areas where there are challenges. Then the point made around the Electricity Amendment Bill, we agree with you, that is a critical piece of what we need to do as a matter of agency, and one of the colleagues can speak on that if time allows. On the JET and the 8.5 billion, I was saying that we are committed to this and we are following progress on this, but so far the main focus in our view has been on dealing with bread and butter issues. We have to address the immediate challenges as outlined in the National Energy Plan. And we don't think that doing so amounts to neglecting the other opportunity that is coming up. Then ECD transfer to DBE, we take the point he made. I think it was a typo, so we then deal with it. We agree overall, the Honorable Chair, that we need to strike a balance between social plans and the economy, the performance of the economy. And in many of our recommendations, we have dealt with this issue. We have gone to cabinet to indicate that we can't have a situation whereby social grants keep on growing, but the tax base is not growing as much in terms of the number of people who pay tax. So we'll agree with that. It's a matter that government decides with, and I think in the in other portfolios like in social development, this matter is canvassed and dealt with in some detail. So then I do that. Overall, we agree with the point on the local government that we need to deal with the funding structure of local government. One of the biggest concerns of the EPME is that many municipalities are struggling to pay the water bills, and we are afraid that if that continues, we'll end up with a situation whereby the water bills are not going will collapse like the electricity system. So we have raised this issue quite a lot. On SAPs, what we've been saying is that we will not have all the warm bodies that we need for SAPs. And in our many reports, we have suggested that we must augment the capacity of SAPs by using technology like drones. There must be drones that SAPs use. But also in our last recommendation, we said that instead of resourcing these departments that constitute the security cluster one by one, we need a comprehensive system that assesses the capacity needs of all of them. So you don't want to give money to SAPs, but justice does not have money. We don't want to give money to justice and correctional services does not have money. So we are, as the PME, working with the cluster to deal with that and ensure that when we deal with the budgets of this cluster, it is always looked at as an integrated group. Lastly, on my side, on the issues raised by the Honorable Manumanu on the monitoring of public entities, we do deal with that, and I'll ask one of the DDGs to just speak on the planning part of it and what it is that we are going to do. Now, let me allow this colleague, the Honorable Czech, to speak in their area. I have Ms. Spalari to comment on the economic area. Then the wealth question related to health, I'll ask Mr. Marcelina to deal with that. There are issues related to social cohesion. I'll ask Ms. Trafford to speak on that. And then ask DDG and Grisel to briefly say something on planning matters. And the DDG of the branch that is leading this presentation will comment on one or two issues that I might have missed. So we'll be straight to the point, Chair, this time, so that we can spare you on time. Thank you. In that order.
Afternoon, everyone. Thanks, DG and Chair. I'll speak on the electricity pricing policy issue. Where we are right now is we are conducting an evaluation of, at the DPME together with the University of Pretoria's enterprise branch, which is, has an advanced modeling model that will help us understand the impact
the proposed pricing policy for South Africa on electricity. So just to take you through the quick steps that we are following through with, we started with an assessment of the NERSA's electricity pricing policy review that was published in 2021, the last one. And the second phase of the project was to do stakeholder consultations on the proposed modeling framework that we are going to use for the project, with a partial full implementation of the NERSA proposed review or a full implementation of the successful of the NERSA proposed review. And at this stage, we have concluded yesterday, with Professor David Wayman from the University of Pretoria, the assumptions that we're going to use in the model, and as well as the indicators. For example, some of the indicators include the development of new markets as we pursue this EPP review by NERSA, as well as the development of new producers and wholesalers, as well as the economic viability of whether of the products, wholesalers, or the new markets in South Africa. And this will also take into consideration the procurement of renewable energy from IPPs, and the adjustments of supply chain regulations to fast track the finalization of IPP bid windows in the process, as we are gearing up as a country to implement bid windows 6 and 7 sometime later in the current financial year. And the final phase will be the modeling results with the agreed scenarios that I won't bother with you with now. But in conclusion, I would like to say that the EPP review from NERSA forms an important foundational document of the work with our entire evaluation of the electricity pricing policy in the country. And also, it will also help the country to create new market mechanisms to support the unbundling of the electricity sector as a whole, and create institutions that will support competition across all sectors. And in time, whether it's full or partial implementation of the EPP review as recommended by NERSA, it will guide us towards a review of the integrated resource plan that the Minister of DMRE is intending to finalize with speed, as requested by the presidency, in the next 6 months or end of the current financial year. And lastly, we agreed beforehand, all stakeholders agree that the EPP review, whether fully implemented or partially implemented, it will not be the answer that we all want in terms of resolving the energy crisis, but it's a step towards unbundling and also implementing the policy reforms that will help us with a load shedding and the energy crisis in the country. Thanks, DG and Chair. I'll stop there.
Thank you very much. I will respond to maybe just three of the issues raised. The others, the DG has very adequately dealt with them. On let me start by talking to Isara Batman, a place of remembrance. Indeed, it has been a very worrisome a project, and it was brought. Everyone is looking at it, if I can say it like that. It is a project we went to visit to check, and indeed a new delivery model has been put in place that includes the community there as well. And the reason why there is a recommendation for consolidation rather than starting something new for now is to try and ensure that all of these many projects, and Sarah Batman is just one of the many,
that have not yet been completed or completed in a very short manner, the department focuses on them, finalizes them, ensures that they work, there's audience development, they do what they're supposed to do before they think of new programs and projects to implement around a cultural redress. The second one is that on ECD, there hasn't been a review yet, and we will ask for a very quick evaluation to happen, because we went to many ECD centers and they have not complained around the shift, the ones that we visited. But as you are saying, there could be challenges, and therefore it is important that we have a very quick evaluation so that we come up with better delivery models. On GBVF, the honorables will remember that there is a national strategy against gender-based violence that is being implemented and reported literally at the highest level, straight to the first citizen of the country. There are challenges around implementation that are being looked at, and the new methodologies around ensuring the issues that the honorable raised, such as the fact that there are not enough shelters, have been raised, and the DG has mentioned that some of those issues are in the delivery agreements of ministers. I think those were the main ones that I could quickly respond to. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Thoban, followed by DDG Grisel, followed by DDG Makomo, and that will conclude our responses.
Thank you, DG. The question that was asked for, I think it was a comment on the issue of what called the DDM in terms of the what called the implementation. But in short, just to add the information is to say the DDM, it was then what called piloted in the three districts, and the outcome, it was satisfactory, of which DDG Grisel will add the information upon the one plan that they are assessing together with the Department of Cooperative Governance.
Okay, thank you, DDG Grisel. On planning matters and the issues around the provinces.
Okay, thank you, DG, and good day to Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. So, and my apologies, some of the issues raised I didn't fully hear, but I'll try to respond. I think the question was asked around the relationship between planning across the different spheres. And if I can just take a few quick steps backward, I think the first thing is that we, as DPME, we did a diagnostic on the state of planning at national provincial level. That was very important. It was very, very comprehensive, done by an independent service provider, obviously under our guidance. And that the findings of that diagnostic were very important. We'd be happy to present it to this forum or the new portfolio committee. But essentially, it is around issues such as the continued fragmentation of the planning system. So even at the centre of government, there's inadequate, let me not say no coherence, but there's inadequate coherence. And then, of course, you know, the coherence between different spheres of government, including, and that expresses itself even in the context of the DDM1 plans. But we also find, you know, there's a lack of professional capacity, and hence the importance of the professionalization framework, including within the planning profession. So those are just some of them. We then also developed a policy framework for integrated planning, which we have presented to this portfolio committee, which essentially looks at how to promote that better coherence and harmonization towards the achievement of better development results. And you know, it looks at different aspects of planning, short, medium, and long-term planning, institutional planning as governed by the revised framework of strategic plans and APPs, including the strategic plans and APPs of departments and public entities that were spoken about. We have also done significant revision work on the legislation, which I know the Portfolio Committee has also been very interested in. It is now called the National Development Planning Framework Bill. It is just about ready to go to Cabinet. We've had extensive consultation, especially in terms of the giving legislative effect to the presidency's planning responsibilities. The minister in the presidency responsible for planning, monitoring, evaluation, the DPME itself, the National Planning Commission. So that legislation will be key in terms of ensuring a greater strengthening and harmonization of the planning system, including with provinces and municipalities, whilst acknowledging that the constitutional founding practices with regard to the different spheres of government. And we also have a lot of various intergovernmental forums, including the National Steering Committee on Integrated Planning, that brings together centre of government departments at a national level with the offices of the Premier of all the provinces. And that's been very important in creating coherence. And from our perspective, there is a large degree of alignment between the priorities of national government and those of different provinces. With regard to the district development model, I think we would be quite happy to do a presentation even together with DCOG regarding the progress made on the district development model. As DPME, we do chair the Presidency Steering Committee on the district development model, which is really there to help provide oversight, provide support to DCOG. But also, and I think we all know that there's been a lot of progress was made on the development of the district profiles, which is in a sense the starting point. The first generation one plans were developed towards the end of last year, and we were part of the analysis of those one plans, and we found that, you know, there's a need for a lot more quality to go into those one plans. And some of the gaps include inadequate participation of non-governmental stakeholders, business, etc., community, but also inadequate participation of provincial and national departments in the development of those one plans. And that, one of the root causes there is what our DG said at the beginning, that there's inadequate specialization planning by our national provincial departments, as well as the, including the public entities, as well as the state-owned companies. I'll leave it there for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Sometimes your permission, I would ask DDG Makomo, in the absence of Mr. Masilela, to also deal with the health issues that we need. And that will mark the end of our report.
Thank you very much, DG, and the chair and honorable members of the committee. I don't know if my camera can see you. You can see me there, but I'm going to see Shido.
Yes.
I wanted to see my face because I haven't seen my face. I'm going to see Shido because of the internet problem. My name is Makomo Chatsinde. I'm the DDG responsible for this area. And we really welcome all the comments which have been made in terms of the you know, our presentation, and to where I'm standing right now, I think most of the things have been covered, you know, in length, and you know, one thing which I've picked up is that you were also given, you know, some advice in many other areas that need us to, you know, to be looking into. So I've also picked up the issue of targets, which we were talked to that you know, some of the recommendations which we have don't have the targets and the dates. I would like to say to the committee that yes, apologize for that, but, you know, all of our recommendations which we come up with, you know, which goes to the cabinet, becomes a cabinet decision. And we do implementation plans with the departments, you know, which have got those which are smart, which has got dates and targets, and we actually follow through in terms of reporting back to Parliament, like in terms of the achievements and you know, and taking it forward. So most probably not an opportune target there in here. It was just an oversight from ourselves. The issue of the ECG, I've got Dr. Mabogwane, I saw Dr. Mabogwane here. We take the point. We are aware of the teething problems which we had at the beginning. You know, we are in touch with the problems and challenges which are there. And in no time, we believe that those will be will be ironed out, and we'll be able to report back to you. Going forward, DJ has already talked about us going back to cabinet. There will be updated versions of the documents which we have already which we are presenting today. And we believe that as much as we are moving away from our parliamentary portfolio committee, we are still able to and willing to share with you the documentation, so that I have sent you a number of reports, you know, which could be very helpful in terms of the oversight and in terms of looking deeper into the elements of the issues which you have raised. You know, during this committee meeting, and again, going forward, we will be also involved with the review of what the Democratic government has been doing, and I think you know, your contribution and everyone's contribution in the country will be essential, and that will also become one of your resource, you know, in terms of the you know, how we see our progress from where we started 1994 to date. And with those few words, I believe that we are not going to discuss, you know, because we don't report, you know, back to this portfolio committee, but we can be called at any time to come and provide you with the progress which we need. You know, through you and as a collective, we're able to make a stride in ensuring that our government succeeds, our people get saved, and our economy as well as our country forward. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Chair, thank you. That, I just want to make a request to quickly allow Dr. Mabogwane to deal with priority issues. We are informed that Mr. Masilela is somewhere in the following on NHI matter. That will be our last input. Chair, my apologies.
Yes, DJ, I will give him the 2 minutes. I understand that honourable members must also catch buses and be prepared for debates in the afternoon.
Thanks, Chair. I think the only outstanding one was around the issue of putting subjects in the laptop, and where the honourable member was saying where there's only one subject and whose responsibility is it. That from our understanding is that the schools are expected to be downloading those, because DBE has already put them on their cloud. And then secondly, the other option is that the districts are also supposed to bring those CDs that actually upload subjects in those laptops. the other questions Joseph Fielder has dealt with around the ECD. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, DPFME. And now we're at the end of our meeting, and let me thank all of you, the department as led today by the DG, and wish you well to your new portfolio committee, and thank you to honorable members, the staff, and everyone in the platform. Now this is the end of our meeting, and goodbye.
Okay.
Goodbye, Chair.
Okay.
Bye, Chair.